with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hooray, 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 step right up. You will not believe your eyes. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Step right up, step right up. Entry is free. You will not believe the freaks who stand before you this Moran Monday on the horn. We've had a weekend in which all manner of Morans have come pouring out of the right-wing cesspool sewer that they inhabit. Hurry, hurry, hurry. You cannot tell your Morans without a program, and this is the program to identify the Morans for you. Hurry, hurry, hurry. We've got a lovely crowd established on the midway for this Moran Monday. Hurry, hurry, hurry.
Yeah, we really do. We've got them local. We've got them national. We've got them international. It's almost like the end of that Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Head for the hills! You'll be up to your armpits in Morans!
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is, this could be fun tonight. Or it could be creepy and scary. Because you know what? There is an element, there is a portion of the Moranosphere that is past being stupid and going way over into crazy. Obviously, for instance, the Texas teabagger terror pilot, Joe Stack, clearly belongs on Moran Monday. How could he possibly not? And of course, as nominees for Moran Monday, we can also include all the, no kidding, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people in this country who, left and right alike, are saying things like, well, I understand why he done what he done. Really? You do? You understand why a disaffected white guy whose tax dodge failed, who owned $250,000 house, who owned an airplane, would set fire to his house with his wife and children in it, and then go fly his airplane into a building with working human beings in it? You understand why he did that? Oh, hell yeah! There's one. First of all, and it's up on the website at headonradionetwork.com. Our Southeast correspondent Matt Osborne of OsborneInc.com, OsborneInc.com, built a little video. Over the last few days, that takes advantage of a few of the things that were said here on the program, I guess Thursday night. Go over to headonradionetwork.com and have a look. It's pretty cool. Matt did great work. But if you go and you see the thing at YouTube, where, you know, it's its own little YouTube location, you'll see this little guy about three related videos down on the right. Remember, and this is the obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. Do you remember the episode where the Enterprise was up against the really big, scary spaceship? And Captain Kirk threatened to trigger the Corbomite device because there was this really creepy looking alien with a really long, creepy head, but it turned out that he was just the facade for a very peaceable young Clint Howard. Yes, that episode. Well, this little dude who posted, you know, him and his webcam, me and my webcam, yeah, that kind of thing, posted a response entitled Joseph Stack is a Hero, looks just like the long-faced alien guy had a kid, and gave him a little laptop or MacBook or whatever with a webcam in it, and the kid grew a beard, or part of one, much as he could. Just listen to this. This guy's a loony. Here we go.
A man called Joseph Stack crashed his little plane into an IRS building in Texas recently. And all I have to say is, having read the incidents surrounding why he did it, he is a hero. And he deserves the applause of all people who support freedom. Because here's the thing. You get from the government every fucking single...
Hey, Moran, does he deserve the support from the people who love freedom that he killed? Oh, I guess they didn't love freedom because they were just government functionaries.
Single day, freedom isn't free. Freedom isn't free. We've got to send young men over to, you know, foreign places to die so that we can be free.
Sadly, not you, but I know what you mean, buddy.
It's okay to die for what the government says is freedom. Isn't it all right to die for what you think freedom is? I think so.
So this guy has been transmuted in a matter of days in the consciousness of certain people who, I don't know, breathe out of balloons or something, into a folk hero who died for freedom. Not died because he was involved in a failed tax dodge. No. Not died because he didn't have the courage to fight, to struggle through whatever problem he was in. He died for freedom. Just a couple more.
He had the courage to do what many other people have not had the courage to do. He was destroyed.
Yeah, kill the innocent. That takes some courage.
For things which, according to what I'm reading here, were relatively trivial, like $1,600 in debt that he couldn't pay, and losing his business license as a result of what amounts to a small amount of money. I don't consider that fair. And he states in here that, let me go down and see if I...
Hey, piss boy, life ain't fair. Weren't you watching the CPAC convention when the newly die-jobbed, Glenn Beck came to the podium and declared that life is not fair, and to stop giving our children, everybody, all of our children a trophy like it's Little League or something? Weren't you watching? Jesus. You know, I'm looking at this guy and it reminds me of something. It reminds me of, this.
Love in a Subaru by Damascus. Well, you'd think you'd care to get in an argument with Fred Flossie and friends.
The record of the century. Pencil neck geek. Enjoy the record, my new album. So good night, good luck, and good riddance, you pencil neck geeks. Enjoy it.
Back when I was a kid, life was going swell. Till something happened, blew everything to hell. That night my daddy stumbled in, all pale and weak. Said a woman up the block just gave birth to a geek. Mom said, sell it to the circus. What the heck? Dad said, nope, this one's a pencil man. And if there's one thing lower than a sideshow freak, it's a gritty, scum-sucking pencil neck geek. You see, if you take a pencil to home of lead, it looks like a pipe cleaner, match of a head, and a buggy whip body with a brain that leaks. you got yourself a gritty pencil neck geek.
Pencil neck geek. Gritty, freak, scum-sucking P.F. with a lousy physique. He's a one-man, low-cut, losing streak. Nothing but a pencil neck geek.
Yeah, you get the idea. Let's see. Joe Stack was an American hero. You're right. Sure he was. Except that he wasn't. He was a murderer. Except to his daughter. His daughter, who lives in Norway, you know, socialist paradise, an adult daughter named Samantha Bell, the one that he didn't try to burn alive, spoke to ABC's Good Morning America from her home in Norge. And in a phone interview, she said she considered her father a hero because now maybe, her words, yes, because now maybe people will listen. To what? To the fact that the guy was a goddamn loser? We know that. That's not a tough fathom job. Ken Hunter, the son of Vernon Hunter, who Joe Stack murdered in his homicidal teabag and rage, said, "How can you call someone a hero who, after he burns down his house, he gets into his plane and flies it into a building to kill people? My dad Vernon did 2 tours of duty in Vietnam. My dad's a hero." Yeah. But that's okay. Samantha Bell went on, "If nobody comes out and speaks up on behalf of injustice, then nothing will ever be accomplished. But I do not agree with his last action and what he did. But I do agree about the government." Really, you agree about the government? Yeah, this might be... Like I said, and the guy, oh, by the way, for those of you who think that I might be overreacting a little bit, guess what? There's a video game out there now where you get to be Joe Stack. And it's out on the intertubes. Game users must obtain a can of gasoline, burn a house, then pilot a single-engine airplane into an IRS building. Upon successful completion, the game declares, "Justice is served!" Along the way, if the players manage to hit a malfunctioning Toyota Prius, they are rewarded with the Auto Recall Medal. It's getting a little creepy out there. No, it's getting a lot creepy out there. Who the hell am I kidding? Yeah, a lot creepy. So we've got that Moran and all the Morans around him, including little pencil neck geek man who calls himself Botany 101.
Botany Bay, Botany Bay.
Yep, Star Trek reference number 2. But that's okay. We'll get through the program. Oh, and by the way, before we go into further Morans, just a reminder for the evening, or for tomorrow night. Live, you heard me, live from the campus of West Virginia State University in Institute, West Virginia, right next to a great big pressurized canister of methyl isocyanate, the same stuff that brought you Bhopal. Live from the campus of West Virginia State University in Institute, West Virginia, the Seneca 2 Forum featuring Robert Perry. Yes. Robert Perry of ConsortiumNews.com. And we will have it live, and we will also record it for archiving purposes. And here's the kicker. There will be live video. Yes. Now, what you will have to do if you want to see the video, assuming, of course, that all the connections are solid where we go, because I'm not responsible for their inner tubes. But if everything is solid where we go, and we've got a good intertubes connection, and Senator Stevens isn't out there sending anybody an internet tonight, Because, you know, it's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Assuming that that's all squared away, we've got stuff square on our end. And we're all set to bring this to you live via video. The way you'll do it is you will go to Ustream, the letter U, and stream, S-T-R-E-A-M, Ustream.tv, and you will look for an individual channel called The, wait a minute, wait for it, you know what it's going to be, The Horn, capital T, little H, little E, capital H, capital O, capital R, capital N, The Horn. And you will be able to watch, not just hear, but watch the event live from the methyl isocyanate capital of the world, Institute, West Virginia. So I find that pretty exciting. And I hope it leads to other good things. Now, if you just want to listen, you listen the same old way that you've been listening all along. So that'll start about 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So the program will not start at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time because I will be madly connecting things and making sure everything works. But we are all set to go. And this is awfully darned exciting. I hope it is for you as well. Cross thy fingers that everything's right on that end. Because if it is, this is no baby step. This will be a giant leap for horn kind. So there's that. Now, back to the morans. Let me do something real quick here. Okay, that's taken care of. Back to the morans. Okay, let's lose this pencil neck geek. Goodbye, pencil neck geek. We got lots of morans out there. Like I said, local morans, worldwide morans, national morans. Let's just go slow, Bob. We don't have to do it all at one time. You know, we've talked about Virginia State Delegate Bob Marshall in the past. News Ninja Susan sent this along to me for Moran Monday, and this guy's got to be a way up there nominee. Yeah, he was a nominee a couple of weeks ago, as a matter of fact, I think. But, yes, right-wing, absolute wing-nut, drool-dripping, knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, freak, Virginia State Delegate Bob Marshall had a press conference about his opposition to Virginia State funding for Planned Parenthood. And, of course, he blasted the organization because Planned Parenthood supports a woman's right to choose what happens inside her own body that pasty-faced, doughy white guys have no business intervening in. And he said the following. Oh, God, what I wouldn't give for the audio of this. The number of children who are born subsequent to a first abortion with handicaps has increased dramatically. Why? Because when you abort the firstborn of any, nature takes its vengeance on the subsequent children. In the Old Testament, the firstborn of every being, animal and man, was dedicated to the Lord. There's a special punishment, Christians would suggest. Yeah. Yeah, how does this guy not just... Number one with a bullet on Moran Monday. Wow. Crazy. Yeah, this guy says that there are handicapped people in the world. Physically, mentally, whatever. Because mama done had an abortion before she had them. And God is punishing mama by making them be handicapped. Hoo-wee! Who in their right mind would worship a piece of crap God like that? I just want to know. But, you know, that's That's the way the Moran brain works. It's a fact. Pretty sickening. But it's also very definitely a fact. Yeah. Coming from one of our new, I believe this is News Ninja Gene, because he has a penchant for changing his name in the chat room just to confuse poor old Bob. The Old Testament is the ultimate guide to nature, don't you know? Nice medieval thinking there. You know, I would just like to see Virginia State Delegate Bob Marshall have to deal with a whole army of pissed off people with walkers and wheelchairs and heavy things that he wouldn't like having rolling over his toes. And the funny thing about this, I mean, this Moran is especially engaging because he uses a little Darwinism in his argument. When you abort the firstborn of any, nature takes its vengeance on the subsequent children. No. Nature. So he's blaming Darwin, but in the next breath he says in the Old Testament the firstborn of every being, animal, and man was dedicated to the Lord. There's a special punishment, Christians would suggest. Yeah, Christians. You know, those people who follow the Prince of Peace. Woo! Mother. So Bob Marshall's got to be up there in the running where Morans are concerned this evening. There's no getting around it. And, of course, if you just scratch the surface of Bob Marshall, you kind of have to ask about the district that he comes from. And I don't know what that district is. But it's got, of the people, and bear in mind, we're not talking about majorities here, but of the people who are willing to go to the polls and cast a vote, there are more people in that county or that delegate region, that delegate district, there are more people in that district that, excuse me. Bob, don't try to drink your decaf and talk at the same time. Darn it. There are more people who think like Bob Marshall. You know, let's assume that on any given election in which Bob Marshall is up for election, that 30% of the populace goes and votes. Well, then there's 16% of that 30%, or there's 51% of that 30% who think just like he does, and they have the power to put that freak in office and keep him there. Because, you know, he's got some family values. Yeah, this is the same guy who says, Obamacare is trying to take your soul. Don't think for an instant that this is some sort of an anomaly. Because it's not. There's all kinds of these freaks out there. There's a guy named Dr. Eric Wargotz. No, I'm not making that name up. He's a repig-licking candidate for the United States Senate. Blogger activist Mike Stark caught up with him and asked him, well, never mind. I think we can maybe get the video of this out there.
Right now, I'm with, what's your first name?
Dr. Eric Wargotz. I'm a physician.
And you are a candidate for the Republican nomination to Senate in Maryland.
The U.S. Senate, the state of Maryland, against Barbara Mikulski.
Okay.
I'm currently the president of the elected president of the Queen Anne County Board of County Commissioners. I'm the only Republican among five commissioners, the other four Democrat.
Very good. This poll I'm about to give you is a poll that originally was conducted by the Daily Coast across the nation of Republicans. should Barack Obama be impeached or not?
To be impeached.
Should he be impeached?
Well, I'd like to. You got to evaluate the accusations, which are the foundation of impeachment.
Right. Do you see anything that he could be accused for that would warrant impeachment?
Not at this point. Not at this point. But I think the birth issue still is out there.
We're going to get to
yes.
it.
Woo-hoo!
Now, do you think Barack Obama is a socialist?
I believe in the. What I understand about his upbringing and his background is he grew up in a system very different than the American culture.
Really, did he?
And so
can you?
I think his tendencies are to more socialist tendencies than the capitalist society, the free market society we have today.
You mean he grew up in Hawaii and that?
No, didn't he spend a good time in the Pacific Rim?
Yeah, I know he went to a madrasa. There was a report that he went to some school or something like that in Jakarta. I'm not sure how long that was for, though.
But I think if you meet people, I've met people from all over the world, I'm sure you have, they gain different perspectives on social issues and how governments, they form very different opinions in some cases on how government ought to work with the
right.
society. And so I think he carries some of that with him, and I don't think that's been helpful to him.
Do you believe Barack Obama was born in the United States or not?
No, I do not believe he was born in the United States.
Do you believe Barack Obama wants the terrorists to win?
I do not deep in my heart believe that, no.
But he does not believe that Barack Obama was born in the United States because, you know, Hawaii is such a foreign country. Isn't that out there in the Pacific somewhere? This is going to be a busy little Monday, I promise you. But those are just a few nominees that we have for Moran Monday. We got more. And I got a feeling we're going to have a bunch of fun this evening. So, as the late, great prophet Bill Hicks once said, strap in. We go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Listen, that thing that you sent me, are you kidding?
No.
Well, no, but I mean, that slaughter case was just completely incredible. These people want to overturn that.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I mean, it took me a minute to realize, and I thought, oh, yeah, that case where people are forced to live in filth at the behest of these, you know, what do they call it in that thing you sent me? Economic liberty? God help us.
Yeah, well, see, I knew that anybody who can mention the Lochner Court in a conversation on this program, as you have done, would have an appreciation for a bunch of right-wing bastards out to overturn the slaughterhouse cases.
No, and the way it's all written, so, you know, like with some common sense, you're, like, reading it, you're like, these people have lost their goddamn mind. Don't talk to me about economic liberty in this country. That's a joke.
Yeah, for about 99.9% of us, you're absolutely correct.
Exactly. And it's just sort of overturning that case will just make it 100%. You know what I'm saying?
And just so people can know, Sandra, what it is that we're talking about, so this
doesn't
doesn't go too much inside baseball. I sent Sandra for the reasons I stated a few moments ago, a link to the right wing propaganda that I routinely get here in the studio, encouraging me to bring right wing knuckle dragging, mouth breathing freaks on to advance their right wing knuckle dragging, mouth breathing freakish agenda. And in this particular case, it has to do with the case that Supreme Court will take up beginning, March 1st, a week from today?
Yeah, it was like, yeah, this coming up, a couple of weeks or whatever.
Yeah, next week. And it has to do with the ban in Chicago on handguns. And because after the right wing struck down the handgun ban in D.C., good move, now they're going after every other handgun ban in the United States.
Well, no, but then they extend it, like they want to turn this case into another Citizens United, you know, where it just expands and goes way, way beyond, you know, to where they want to reconfigure the 14th Amendment to match their nightmare dystopia. I'm looking at that and thinking, dear Lord, you know. You know, I don't even have words to say. Because that slaughter case was just, wow, you know.
Well, it is. Because, again, as you noted, it has to do with people complaining about having to live in squalor and filth.
Right.
That's why they're called the slaughterhouse cases.
Right. No, no. And it's just sort of the implications, no matter how, and to hear the read these people trying to spin it as if, regardless of what the poor people are subjected to, no, we have to, vacate the decision because it, offends people's ability for economic liberty. Are you kidding me with that?
I wish I was.
I mean, I'm just...
That's,
you know,
the problem.
It's just stunning. I'm thinking, I am not... You know, I just can't even wrap my head around... you know, you can see exactly what the case was about. Irrespective of the 14th Amendment, the 10th Amendment, whatever other sort of BS you want to throw out there, we are talking about people trying to just survive, being subjected to rapacious corporations back then. God help us now. And this case is going, you know, it's scary to me. I'm just like, there's no end. The whole discussion about how the court needs to be more aggressive, are you kidding me?
Well, and what's important about this, just so folks can know, is the slaughterhouse cases represented the first time that the brand spanking shiny new 14th Amendment, you know, with its equal protection clause and its due process clause, was interpreted by the Supreme Court. It happened in 1873. And it's the case upon which rests the fundamental stare decisis principle that citizenship in the United States trumps citizenship in all the other several states, and that the 14th Amendment extends the Bill of Rights in its very existence to applicability in the states. It's really the first civil rights case.
No, exactly. And it's, and the thing that gets me about all these sort of cases with these right-wing freaks is how they want to shift something dealing with humans to all these other entities and structures. It's just bizarre.
Yeah, it's a case that turns on the fact that human beings in the New Orleans area, oh, look, were being forced to live in and around squalor and filth from slaughterhouses. In the mid-1800s, New Orleans was plagued by, quote, intestines and portions of putrefied animal matter lodged around the drinking pipes coming from local slaughterhouses whenever the tide from the Mississippi River was low. A mile and a half upstream from the city, 1,000 butchers gutted over 300,000 animals per year. Animal entrails, dung, blood, and urine. Yes, I can always find something to ruin somebody's dinner somewhere, Sandra. A grand jury recommended that the slaughterhouse be moved south. And the court said, no, grand jury, you have no jurisdiction. And so the thing goes on and on and on, up court, until six separate cases were accepted in appeal to the Supreme Court.
Well, I mean, it's just, and, you know, anytime I hear any throwback to this period, you know, when you sent that to me, I was like, oh, what's this? Because that's a really scary period in this country, and it just sort of mirrors what we got going on in the court now. That's why it's extra disturbing, Bob. Because I don't see these fools. You know, I see bad things coming in regards to people versus whatever other entities they want to throw at us, you know. And they'll throw out precedent. We see that. So, you know, gun law is a good enough excuse than anything else. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm just sort of...
Well, exactly. And what underlies this, and just for a moment of brilliant, beautiful trivia... the lawyer for the slaughterhouse owners, by the way, was the butchers, or the butchering companies. Let's not kid ourselves that some guy going home every day was being represented by this freak, was a guy named John A. Campbell. John A. Campbell was a former justice of the United States Supreme Court who had resigned from the bench in order to support the South during the Civil War.
Yeah, wow, okay.
See how it all rolls around, Sandra?
No, and it's just... you know, all of it is just, because I remember when I first stumbled upon that case, I was just sort of mortified, and then once again, I was in awe that the people actually got some relief, you know?
Yeah, but what this is overall, this really is another Citizens United case.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why.
And because the overall goal, aim, and reach of all these right-wing freak organizations via the Supreme Court is via right-wing freak judicial activism that they complain about. If a liberal, you know, if a liberal says that the statute stands, that's judicial activism. But if a right-winger says, no, you got to let the freaks carry guns to Starbucks, well, you know, that's just a correct interpretation of the Supreme Court. But what they are ultimately after, Sandra, is to gut the entire constitutional framework of this country until we descend into a state of absolute, utter, total, and complete anarcho-randian the chaos.
Well, no, not only that, but I love how all of a sudden, you know, the Constitution is pure except when it's not, and they're demanding the Supreme Court, which Hamilton said is the weakest of the branches. Can I repeat that? The weakest. That was the justification for creating this bullshit. So to hear these people come out saying now it needs to be stronger and enforced with what? And what army? You see what I'm saying? We are so cowed that we don't even understand the function.
But you don't maintain any illusions, do you, Sandra, about what the outcome of this case is going to be?
Well, no, I do. You need to tell me what you think is going to be out, because I can't even wrap my head around it.
Oh, the K-Rats. Kennedy, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia. They will rule in favor of the gun. And the guy who wants to carry it to Starbucks.
God, you know, yeah, I mean, so the ban in D.C. was overturned, right? Is that the latest? Is that how?
No, I mean, yeah, that's what the Supreme Court did with that case.
Yeah, and this isn't a surprise. I'm just sort of amazed by the leap that they're taking, you see.
Well, I would, under ordinary circumstances, Sandra, I would be too, but I ain't. Because these monsters are capable of anything when it comes to trying to subvert and pervert the Constitution of the United States of America. And what's left of, and what's left of the principles of the Republic.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just stunning. These people seriously think that the expansion of government after the New Deal has to be taken away. And what's going to be left? I mean, it's just fantasy world. Obviously, the power of the states has to change because they couldn't cope when the economy fell apart. Hence, the New Deal. I mean, I'm just looking at the reality. Obviously, if the states could have handled it, they would have, right? Bob?
Yeah, but of course, but the thing is, the states, especially the southern states, could not be counted on to get it right. Because like then, as now, especially in the southern states, southern governments were owned by moneyed interests whose first and foremost principle was make sure that nobody, white or black, gets uppity.
Well, I mean, no, it's just, it's just stunning that people these days are still walking around, you know, idealizing that BS. Give me a break. And, you know, as far as that Stack person, are you kidding me? Now he's some sort of folk hero?
Yes, he is.
What about the people who the one person that died, the horror of just trying to do your damn job and dealing with that, the house that he burnt down with people in it, all because of what? He's some sort of freaked out white man who feels put upon? Give me a goddamn break.
Well, and that's about as far as you can take it. Yeah, he was put upon. He wasn't suffering. He wasn't begging food on the streets. He owned an airplane, for the love of Christ.
And he didn't have some country bombing his country. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just stunning. And the fact that Brown, whatever his name is, coming out saying, oh, he basically supported what he did.
Oh, but like, I've got another moron nominee for this Monday evening. Mm-hmm. And this guy's got real power. You know, Iowa Representative Steve King, who openly justified this homicidal freak's attack on that building. It wasn't an attack on the IRS. My God, it was an attack on people who worked for the IRS.
And not only that, he flew a plane into a building. To me, it just shows just how meaningless and hollowed out the whole war on terror and that whole narrative is. Just a load of crap, yet again. Unless you're brown, then it's a horror show.
Steve King said, it's sad that the incident in Texas happened. This is the guy who said America would be a better country if gay people would just be quiet about their gayness.
Okay.
This is that freak.
That one.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It's sad the incident in Texas happened. And, you know, whenever you hear somebody start with that tone, it's sad the incident in Texas happened. But, by the same token, it's an agency that is unnecessary. And when the day comes when that is over and we abolish the IRS, it's going to be a happy day for America. So Think Progress then asked the question, so some of his grievances were legitimate? Well, I don't know if his grievances were legitimate. I've read part of the material. I can tell you I've been audited by the IRS, and I've had a sense of why is the IRS in my kitchen. Why do they have their thumb in the middle of my back? Well, why, Representative King? You know, because we have roads and bridges. Because we have millions of dollars that you like to give away to your corporate welfare clients. That's why, Representative King.
Well, no, I mean, these people are so confused. Okay, this is a sitting congressperson?
Yes.
I mean, you know, what the hell? It's stunning. It's just so schizophrenic in this country. Okay, you want roads and all the things you just said, but you want to abolish the arm that provides funding?
I know. Make sure that just, then you feel like you got marbles in your head.
Yeah, no, it's stunning when these people, but still, I'm still stuck on the whole idea that that has gotten very little play. He's not being portrayed. You know, we're not being scared 24 hours a day. I'm real confused. It's like, is the war on terror over?
It is. Well, it never started if you're white enough.
Okay, so it's just a blatant double standard that we are just sort of, that's just how it is, and we just have to move on with it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Muslim or Arabic terrorists drink from a water fountain that says Muslims and Arabs only.
No, remember that American who shot up the military base? That was, they called him a terrorist.
Yeah, but see, he had a Muslim name.
Right, okay, I'm just trying to, like, you know, I'm looking at not foreign attacks, but people.
Well, what about the freaking Klansman who shot up the Holocaust Museum and took down a security guard? What about the guy who assassinated Dr. Tiller? What about the guy who shot up the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation? What about that freak?
And that one that shot that official in Arkansas. Remember that?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, I mean, and what's the common denominator with all that?
White folks.
The usual sort of scary. Well, I'm sorry, these scary white men who, at the end of the day, it isn't that tough for them. But when it does, they start shooting people. It's like, God help us. If black folks behave that way when they were put upon, why can't I can't imagine where this country would be? You understand what I mean?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, you know, look at what was it? Was it Detroit or Newark? Chicago, 1968. The protesters didn't riot. The cops did.
No, I mean, as this comedian said, it said white people couldn't be black if they started on Sunday at noon. And I see that sticks with me because I was, took me a minute. I was like, good night. But, you know, that's what that's about. And it's just, and they're pacified and coddled and not called a terrorist.
And there's, how do you not? You know, it's not just that he's not being called a terrorist. He's got a memorial video game now.
No, but it's just stunning because you look at the definition of terrorism. It's somebody who is, you know, attacking people based on political or religious grievances. And, I mean, he fits all categories.
Well, you know, look, go examine the FBI serial killer profile. The first two categories on it are he's male and he's white. But we dare not, you know, and I have, and you know, Fox News bending over backwards to make sure that, well, the government's saying this is not a terrorist attack. And the only reason, and maybe this is playing Beatles albums backwards, I'm not sure, but the only reason they're not calling, the federal government's not calling this guy a terrorist is because that they know that there is this seething undercurrent of hate-filled white people in this country who, if they call him a terrorist, will start doing more of it.
Well, no, I mean, it's just, yeah, I really don't know. I mean, that sounds reasonable, a reasonable reason. But it's a shame that the state isn't scared of the people in the right way. I mean, to me, I want the state to function in this capacity.
Yeah, this guy, I mean, remember, this guy took off from a little rural airport. He didn't take off somewhere that he had to get his toenails inspected. And, you know, here's a hint to the National Homeland Safety Transportation Bureau of Homeland Freedom Fries or whatever. There is no amount of toenail inspection that would have stopped this guy. What stops this guy is first and foremost, Sandra, recognizing that the biggest terrorist threat that this country faces is white males. And you know, I say that as a white male.
Well, and the increasing in the pass that they get, I mean, they're upping. You notice how it's getting more outrageous. You see what I mean? It's increasing the attacks and what these fools are doing. Now
I mean,
we're up to Cessnas going into buildings. What's next?
All you can be, you can just be glad, Sandra, that aircraft ownership is not more ubiquitous in this country.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I'm still shocked by the low keyness of this whole exercise, and how certain segments are embracing him, and it's just too weird. They, you know, I mean, even that Wesley Snipes had the nerve to stick his head up. I'm like, you need to go sit the hell down.
Yeah, this is not a fight you want in, Wes.
So sit down. I was just like, oh dear God. And also, the only other thing.
But look at the daughter, Sandra. I'm sorry. Look at the daughter sitting in socialist Norway.
Oh, see, I don't know nothing about this. So who's this?
Oh, this is Stack's grown-up daughter, Samantha Huzis. I forget what her last name is.
She's in Norway.
She's living in Norway.
Well, how's she going? That's lucky for her.
Yeah, she got her some health care, and she's got a decent standard of living.
A minimal income, yeah.
Yeah, the only thing she doesn't have, good weather.
Yeah, no, you know, shit, you can go down to the pigs and go get some good weather.
Yeah, right. And but yeah, ABC, Good Morning America, contacted her and she said, "I don't think it was right what my daddy did with the airplane, but I sure do understand it, and maybe this will wake people up."
Oh, that's what she said?
Yes.
Oh no, are you?
Bell, Samantha Bell.
You know that dumbass? She? Oh, what? From Norway? Wow. Listen, this story really has no end. That's. I really didn't expect you to say that. I thought, what?
I mean, it takes a set to say that you understand rage against the government, because, you know, Obama's a socialist and all that. Understand when you're sitting in Norway.
Yeah, I know. That's an easy perch. Wow. Well, listen, I don't. You know, I'll move along. But did you notice that? Obama is now putting out his own plan?
Yeah, thanks. You know, day late, dollar short, whatever.
Yeah, it's just bizarre. Anyway, listen, I got to move on. So,
all right. Take care, Sandra. Have a wonderful evening.
Yeah, you too.
And I think if you get a minute, if you get a chance, you will enjoy Robert Perry tomorrow night.
Oh, no, I'm definitely going to check that out. I really like, you know, his angle on stuff, so I'll be checking it out.
All right. Take care, Sandra.
All right, bye.
Bye now. Calling from California, that's Sandra. We move onward. Oh, rats. Okay, let's see what's going on here. It gets a little confusing sometimes. Okay, here we go, I think. Because we've got this thing called faulty nut behind the telephone pad. I just hung up on the next person I was going to. Let's try this again. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, Bob?
You know, Moran Monday, and I come away from those things, Matt, feeling just as crazy as 4 o'clock. Crazy is catching. Yeah, how much did you find a used Cessna Cherokee for? $30,000 on Craigslist?
$30,000 on Craigslist. This was a used, hang on a second, I'll pull it back up. It was a Piper Cherokee PA-28. And it was a simple Google search. I found one right away for $30K on Craigslist. And
it didn't say some smoke damage, did it?
No, it didn't say that. And I don't think that the plane in Austin is in any condition to be, you know, marketed now. I was, you know, sort of, I looked really close. I wanted to make sure it wasn't like his ad, like he was trying to sell the plane. But I have no doubt.
Yeah, and it didn't say good for parts or anything. Yeah.
No.
I mean, you're in Alabama, I'm in West Virginia. We do understand why we put automobiles up on blocks.
Right.
Then we buy the same model year of the car, and that way we've just got a little built-in parts store.
You know, you see it a lot down here, I have to say. That is something that you do occasionally see, although you find it out beyond the city limits because they will ticket you in the city limits.
Right. Well, you know, that's right. Just the man keeping his iron boot on your freedom-loving neck.
Of course, keeping my property values up with his iron boot on your freedom-loving neck. Yeah, exactly. I was wondering if Texas Betsy would be so kind as to contact the airport where he took off and find out how much he was paying in ground fees per month.
Ooh, there's a good one. I'm sure that Texas Betsy will hear this and maybe investigate.
That is a great line of questioning, because I would like to know just how much he had to pay each month.
Well, you know, it's we haven't gotten to the point where we socialize hangar space yet.
No.
I mean, unless you're a really big airline.
Right, exactly. If you're a big corporate airline, yes, you can have your socialist hangars, but you can't have that if you're a private citizen, no. So this guy owns a plane. He owns a very expensive house. I was doing some background checking into him. Apparently, he was a software guy. Did you catch this?
Software engineer, yeah. And rather a pissy one at that, because he complained that there were no good software engineers in Texas. But
Right.
But that should have meant that he was up to his yin-yang in work.
Yeah.
Because he was
a great software engineer.
Apparently
he was up to his neck in work if he could afford an airplane and hangar fees and a $500,000 home. Yeah. The guy was definitely a lot better off than most of the people who are listening right now. Definitely a lot better off than 99% of the people who are praising him. Yeah, this was no clutch. This guy went gold. Let's just say it.
Yeah,
it's
went
in the video, and you haven't really said it out loud here on the air today, but he went gold. Because this is basically Atlas Shrugged being enacted in Austin, Texas.
Yes, it is.
It's saying, you want my money.
If you sit there and you read all of Atlas Shrugged, isn't Atlas Shrugged just chock-a-block with domestic terrorism?
Oh, yeah. You know, there's that whole section where they blow up the train, and Galt blows up the train with all these innocent people on it, and it's like when you hear people justify this kind of thing, you know, they'll sometimes bring up the whole Death Star metaphor. And Timothy McVeigh did that. You know, those stormtroopers on the Death Star, they weren't responsible, but they were still serving the Empire. And it's like, hold on a minute. The kids in the daycare center, those are stormtroopers? Really? You know, what was that? What else was in that building? That's another thing for Texas Betsy to do. I want to know what else is in that building. Supposedly the CIA had an office or something like that. I want to know how many janitors work there. I want to know how many innocent people were being targeted by this guy who had nothing to do with the IRS.
Right.
We already know that, yes, there were like 13, I think, hurt on the ground and one killed. But, hey, I mean, come on. There's got to be some real journalism here. Because these wingnuts, they're all over my blog. They're all over the YouTube post saying, he was a registered Democrat. And we know that wasn't true.
Oh, Jesus. Wait a minute. Matt, wait. Breaking news. Sue is telling me that she's finding that Joe Stack was co-owner of a hangar at the airport.
Co-owner of a hangar at the airport. Well, I'm definitely going to have to update the YouTube video now.
And by the way, Texas Betsy informing us that CIA is in the building next door.
Aha.
So, you know, this thing's getting kind of oniony. Lots of layers.
That's great. I'm writing this down, by the way, just to make sure I've got some notes. Yeah, I will bust this on Huffington Post and Daily Coast, you know. I'll be happy to. But listen, I wanted to tell you...
But is it... Well, before you go... Or, I mean, not go, but before we move on, okay. Isn't it interesting...
Mm-hmm.
That all this is coming out not by the work of the professional for-profit media, Matt.
They have no interest in this.
They have no talent. They have no skills.
They live off controversy. And this is not a controversy to them. This is not enough to stay on the radar for more than 12 hours. After all, we had Tiger Woods on Friday. You know?
Oh, please don't make me vomit hot coffee.
I'm not going to discuss Tiger Woods, don't worry, but just the mere existence of Tiger Woods swallowed up the weekend news cycle. This got lost. This may have been turned into a hero. I'm a little pissed off.
Well, okay, I'm going to talk about Tiger Woods for about 15, 20, maybe 30 seconds, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
You want to know how bad it is? The Dalai Lama had something to say about... Tiger Woods.
The Dalai Lama. Really?
You know, the flowing robes, the majesty, the seventh son of the Lama. Big hitter, the Lama. Had something to say. Well, I did not know who he was, but once one of my aides made me aware of what had happened, I was reminded of the fact that one of the central tenets of Buddhism, which we hold dear, is self-control. And any good Buddhist should practice self-control.
Everybody should practice self-control.
Come on, Lama! A little something for the effort? How the hell would I ever know that Bill Murray's little monologue in Caddyshack... Oh, wait, it's a golf movie!
I got this mental image of the Dalai Lama in his robes.
You know, so I jump ship. So I jump ship in Nepal, and I sign on as a looper, you know, a pro jock, and I get the Dalai Lama, the big hitter, the Lama. So we're done with 18, and the Lama, he's going to stiff me. And I say, hey, Lama, how about something, you know, for the effort? And he says, there will be no gratuity today for you. But on your deathbed, you will retain perfect consciousness. So I got that going for me, which is good. The Lama has opined on a golfer.
The Dalai Lama.
Now, if that doesn't tell you about the profundity or the ability... Of this culture, which has the attention span of a gnat, the attention span of a hummingbird, be diverted from important national business, to wit, disaffected white guys flying the Larouchian, proto-Randian anarcho-idiots flying planes into buildings. If this doesn't... Oh, my God, the Lama? I'll stop now. That's a little more than 30 seconds, so I apologize.
That's quite all right. That's quite all right. It's your show. You know, the Dalai Lama, bless him. I admire what he's done, but goodness gracious, he's kind of jumped the shark for me in recent years. I don't know. It's just something about he's been there too long in that position of...
Well, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, and I realize that he has perfect Buddhist knowledge, but as long as the communist Chinese are in Tibet, I'm thinking, you know, Tiger Woods, not worth the mention. But that's me. And I'm a bad, bad person, and I recognize that. But anyway. No, you did want to move on to another topic, and please do.
Oh, I didn't necessarily want to move on to another topic. I wanted to tell you that I started something last night. Not done.
Yes.
But when it's done, I will give you an exclusive first reading.
Cool.
I'm going to write the actual ending of Atlas Shrugged.
Ooh.
Yes.
Well, if anybody can do it, you can.
Well, I do have a gift for mimicry with other writers' voices, so I got a copy of Atlas Shrugged, and I am perusing it as best I am able. There are moments. It's almost as bad as when I was going through Sarah Palin's little memoir. Like, I had to stop every few pages and do the marbles in my mouth, and shake it off. Speaking of Sarah Palin, I don't know if you've read her book or not, but I have circled every reference that I've come across to blood, bleeding, killing, the shedding of blood, blood of the lamb, all these kinds of things. It's almost every other page has a circle on it. There are probably 100 references in this book to blood and bleeding and shooting things. She's obsessed with blood.
Why am I not surprised? And, of course, you know, the participation trophy goes out to Matt Osborne for having the nerve to sit there and thumb through that thing. And red highlighter? You know, the red ink underline? What?
No, I'm using a pen. A blue pen.
Well, okay. You know, you're sort of working off theme there, Matt. But
yeah, exactly. Using a red
pen. But I trust there's a horse gag and load of them.
Oh, there's a lot of them. There's probably 100 references in her little book, the blood, bleeding, things getting shot, bleeding to death, meat being eaten.
Nice.
And, you know, this woman hangs out in a church where they talk about the blood all the time.
Oh, have you been washed in it? Yeah, and then, by the way, do you know where that metaphor comes from? Washed in the blood?
Go ahead and tell us.
Wouldn't that be the Mithras cult?
It was Mithras cult, yes.
Where the acolyte or initiee or whatever, the initiate, the plebe, the noob. I wonder what Latin for noob is.
probably noob.
but Nubus. Nubus, newbie.
Yeah.
Oh, God. See, that would make it newbie, nuborum, nubis, nubos, nubis, nubos, nubos. No, nubis.
I will trust in you. I never studied Latin.
But anyway, he would stand in a pit and they would slaughter a bull over him and let the bull's blood drain out and wash all over the initiate. And he was thereby washed in the blood of Mithras.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because the bowl was dedicated to Mithras, yes.
Right. And just to sort of take it to somewhere you don't want to go, but we're going anyway.
Let's go.
Are you familiar with this outfit called Oath Keepers?
I am somewhat familiar with Oath Keepers, yes. This has been in the news recently. Go ahead.
These are some sick, crazy bastards.
Mm-hmm.
This, and what's sick and creepy about it is they're being courted, the Oath Keepers, by, you know, the Teabaggers and the John Birchers, and the you know, all these right-wing freak organizations. And what they are is active-duty military, Matt.
Yeah.
They are active duty military, and anywhere there's a military base, there's a big gaggle of these people, and they get together once a month and they repeat their oath to the Constitution that they took when they entered the military.
Mm-hmm. I took the same oath.
Right, but that wasn't enough for them.
Mm-hmm.
They add to it. There's more. You know, it's sort of a military Ginsu commercial. But wait, there's more. because they not only repeat their oath, they then add a further vow, promising to disobey unconstitutional orders from a tyrannical government.
Right, disobeying unconstitutional orders. Well, I have read the Constitution, and I see that the President of the United States is the Commander-in-Chief, according to the Constitution, and that they obey his orders. I know that the law of land warfare says that if a order would be a violation of the Geneva Convention, I have the responsibility to ignore that order and to tell the person giving me that order that it is a violation of the Geneva Convention. However, I see nothing about disobeying orders that I think are unconstitutional. In fact, that's not what the military does. There's nothing in the Constitution about the military getting to decide what is or is not constitutional. So as far as I'm concerned, these guys are violating the Constitution that they have sworn to defend.
Well, and not only that. these people are uber-Christianized.
Right.
Right. Yeah, hell, you know the drill. Well, I found out all about this via an article at Mother Jones.
Mm-hmm.
MotherJones.com. It is an article by Justine Sherrick called Oath Keepers and the Age of Treason.
I'm glad she used that word. I said months ago we need to remember two words when we talk about these folks, treason and sedition. But go ahead.
Well, she met up with this guy whose last name is not used. We'll just say that he is Private First Class Lee Prey.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the flop sweats for a brand new shooting gun. He wants a 50 caliber Bushmaster bolt action rifle. 2,500 yard range, Mark IV scope, and an Easy Load magazine. New from Easy Load.
You know, military barracks are an environment where they do not allow you to keep personal weapons.
Oh, no, he has no intention of keeping it there. The thing's got a $5,600 price tag, but Private First Class Prey is saving up for it.
And what does he need that for?
Well,
what
he's an...
possibly need that for when...
He's an Oath Keeper, Matt!
If he wants to go to sniper school, the Army will be glad to give him one. It'll have a serial number on it, and it'll be registered to his name in the Army inventory. He'll take it out in the shooting range. He'll get to shoot it. And if he gets into a war, he'll get to shoot it at real people and get the pink spray if he wants to.
See, no, that's not why he needs this.
Of course not.
He needs this because our government is going to take away our freedoms. And just in case you were wondering about Oath Keepers themselves, the organization, it was founded last April, according to Justine Sherrick at MotherJones.com, by a Yale-educated lawyer and, here we go again, get the book out, ex-Ron Paul aide, Stuart Rhodes. You remember Ron Paul, the guy who named his son Rand Paul?
Yes. Ron Paul, who won the straw vote at the CPAC convention.
That guy, yeah.
And got booed. Did you see this?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. So,
I've been talking for months about the teabagger fail. You're seeing it happen. The internal contradictions are coming to the front.
But in the midst of that is all of these Oath Keepers.
Mm-hmm.
And he is, he's got his plans. Founder Stuart Rhodes told the author here, too many conservatives relied on Bush's character and didn't pay attention. Only now, with Obama, do they worry and see what has been done. I trusted Bush to only go after the terrorists, but what do you think can happen down the road when they say, I think you're a threat to the nation? So young Mr. Prey has a buddy who is a fellow Oath Keeper and told Ms. Sherrick to prepare a bug-out bag. And a bug-out bag is a parcel that has 39 items. Gas masks, ammo, water purification tablets.
Everything you need for the zombie apocalypse.
Exactly. So you can be ready to go when the shit hits the fan. That's the quote. Now, what are they going to do? Well, you know, when they've had all they can stand of the Negro in the White House, they're all going to go AWOL. And they're going to go to their fortified bunker, which is actually the basement of one of his comrades' mommies in, where else, rural Idaho, where they've got a bunch of survival gear, generators, food, and weapons.
You know, I have...
And here's the part that'll make you sweat a little bit, Matt. If it becomes necessary, they say, they will turn those guns against their fellow soldiers.
You know what? I don't want that guy in my foxhole.
Yeah, never mind not wanting a gay guy in the foxhole or an atheist or anything. Don't need no oath keeper.
I will take Lieutenant Choi over that guy any day. Any day.
Yeah. You know, and listen to the MO for this guy. His father kicked him out of the house at age 14. 2 years later, after working jobs from construction to plumbing, it's blue collar, I've done it. He tried to enlist. It wasn't long after 9/11 and he was hell-bent on revenge. The Army turned him down, blaming the Thor tattoo across his fist. Prey tried to burn it off. On September 11th, 2006, he approached the Army again and was accepted. This, of course, after the Bush administration, in the desperation to get somebody, anybody, everybody into the military, started relaxing the regulations.
The 1990s saw Bill Clinton take several steps to get the Pentagon to professionalize the force.
Okay, wait. Here's the fun.
You had to have a high school diploma to get in.
You're right.
All those rules got relaxed. But go ahead.
Yeah, you could be a dropout, and you could be a dropout who had committed rape.
Yes.
You could be a dropout who had committed rape and smoked dope.
Yes.
You could be a dropout who had committed rape, smoked dope, and done B&E. And joined a white supremacist Aryan Nations type movement.
Yes, all those. I remember in the 90s, the Stars and Stripes reporting on how the white supremacists were being basically drummed out of the U.S. Army and were being given the choice. You either have to give this up, and they actually helped them remove tattoos if they wanted. You have to either give up this white supremacist stuff or you have to leave the military. And you get no advancement in rank until you make that choice. And I remember there was an article in Stars and Stripes about a guy facing his choice and, you know, kind of came to Jesus in a way, decided that white supremacy wasn't for him, and wound up, you know, getting all his tattoos zapped off and went into NCO school, became a sergeant. You know, that was the choice that they had to make. And, you know, the article went on about how 97 guys had been drummed out or something like that, some almost 100 guys had been drummed out of service. That was the 1990s. And one of the things that happened after 2001 is that they opened the doors. Now, mind you, they didn't do what previous generations have done, which is simply, okay, we're going to have some kind of a conflict, so we're going to actually pay for it. We're going to have a declaration of war and use the entire national resources. You know, they didn't have a draft. What they did was they just said, okay, we're going to relax all the recruiting standards down to nothing. And so they started taking just about anybody who'd come in the door.
Well, this guy is going to make you sweat.
I'm already sweating. Thank you.
Well, let's go with a little bit more of what Justine Sharrock has to say at MotherJones.com. Mm-hmm. Now, Private First Class Prey is both a birther and a truther. He believes he is following an illegitimate foreign-born president in a war on terror launched by a government plot, 9/11.
Uh-huh.
He admires soldiers like Army Reservist Major Stefan Frederick Cook, who volunteered for a deployment last May and then sued to avoid it, claiming that Obama is not a natural-born citizen and is thus unfit for command. This is the creep who was represented, I believe, by Orly Tates, or
yeah.
Oily Taters. Prey himself had been eager to go to Iraq when his own unit deployed last June, but he smashed both knees falling from a crane rig, and the injuries kept him stateside. Aww. In September, he was demoted from specialist to private first class. He'd been written up for bullshit infractions, he said, after seeking help for a drinking problem.
Right.
His job on base involves operating and maintaining heavy machinery. The day before we met, he and his fellow undeployables had attached a snowplow to a Humvee, their biggest assignment in a while. He spends idle hours at the now-quiet base researching the New World Order and conspiracies about swine flu quarantine camps and doing his best to wake up. Wait a minute. What? Wake up the other soldiers. Wait a minute. Wait, we're going back again, Matt. What was in that filthy screed by that murderous, homicidal asshole in Texas? Yes, he wanted to wake up the zombies.
Ah, yes. The zombies. It's projection, of course. I've actually got a video on my YouTube channel, Attack of the Town Hall Zombies.
I mean, this is an amazing story. Prey isn't sure how to do this and still cover his ass. He talks to me on the record and agrees to be photographed, even as he hints that the CIA may be listening in on his phone. Although I met him through contacts from the group's Facebook page. Yeah, that's right. The Oathkeepers have a Facebook page. But people urging Facebook to not power itself with filthy coal, they can't have a Facebook page. But never mind. Prey, fearing retribution, keeps his Oathkeepers ties unofficial. Stuart Rhodes, the founder, and Randian anarcho-Randian, encourages active duty soldiers to remain anonymous, noting that a group with large numbers of anonymous members can instill in its adversaries the fear of the unknown, a, quote, great force multiplier, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
For a time, Prey insisted we communicate via Facebook after, safer than regular email, he claims. Driving me from the mall back to my motel, he takes a new route. He says unmarked black cars sometimes trail him. Sounds paranoid. Then again, when you're an active duty soldier contemplating treason, some level of paranoia is probably sensible. Or I would say some level of paranoia is probably going to be endemic to the process.
Yeah, you would definitely think that paranoia would be a natural part of that particular situation. Yeah. That just makes a little bit of sense to me. I don't know about you, Bob, but I think I would be a little paranoid, too, if I was actively engaged in sedition against, you know, the U.S. Constitution. But think about it this way. What's going to happen here, more than likely, is the CIA is going to have nothing. The CIA is not going to be involved. It's going to be his company commander. His company commander is going to call him into the office, and he's going to be standing there at parade rest. The company commander is going to sit there at his desk, and he's going to say, I have this magazine here in front of me. He's going to be paging it back and forth in the article, and he's going to see the pictures of himself on the desk, and he's going to think, oh, this is it. And the company commander's going to say, we need to have a discussion about this, you and me, private. Oh, to be a fly on the wall.
Oh.
To be a fly on the wall.
And a couple of really neat observations coming in, Matt. One from Ron in Raleigh saying, he's saving up for a 50 caliber Bushmaster rifle? Bob, I remember when PFC saved up for a set of chrome mag wheels. My, how times have changed. and then this, on a much more serious note, from our dear friend Jude. The veteran, Vernon, I'm sorry, I've already forgotten his last name. The man who was killed by the homicidal maniac Joe Stack. This veteran also happens to be an African-American. Is this why no Christian neocon in right-wing media wants to offer condolences or even acknowledge his being killed? Support the troops. How they lie.
Yeah.
Telling, ain't it? Sue updating. Joe Stack did co-own the hangar, allegedly with someone who works for Dell.
Uh-huh.
She's taken a screenshot of the appraisal deed. She says, you know, because you know it'll be pulled soon.
Yes. I saw that in the chat room. I've got it open.
So here we have $250,000 house, owning your very own private airplane, co-owning your very own airplane hangar. And Sue says, yeah, let me know when we should start the effing pity party.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, world's smallest violin, you know?
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. The plane and the hangar were probably not enough to get him out of trouble if he had turned around and sold them because he'd been doing this for years. And this is something I wanted to touch on earlier. He was a software engineer, as we talked about. And, you know, software engineers there in the 1990s began to regard their profession as this, not just a cutting technological edge, but as sort of the edge. Some of them seemed to think it was the edge of a new social revolution. And these are people who had been steeped in Atlas Shrugged, and because, frankly, they were pencil neck geeks who never had a life, they didn't really understand how the world works. They didn't understand how much they depend on things like government. And if they did understand, of course, they just turned it into samsara of the wacky. They just turned it into further proof that the government is taking over their lives. And this bunch of people is actually out there in, I won't say that they're organized by any means, but they're Randians. They're atheists for the most part. And you can find an awful lot of them if you go to one social networking site, which is not Facebook. You go to Reddit, R-E-D-D-I-T. There seems to be a lot of predomination of them there. There's quite a few of them. And I think that part of the reason why I keep having all these, your viewers can come and check the YouTube channel. They can check my blog, too. I'm just covered in comments from these wingnut trolls. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you had one little troll absolutely downright obsessed.
Yes, and they do get obsessed. But, yeah, they come out of the Internet, the wingnutosphere, I call it. And, yeah, they're ever-present, and, yeah, you can always find them on Reddit. And apparently YouTube. I didn't realize just how many wingnuts were on YouTube. But here's the thing.
Well, but wait, Matt. What we don't realize is how many wingnuts there are all over this country. This country is one great big pissed off white sleeper cell that's had its mind absolutely poisoned by Fox News and Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Michael Savage and Bill O'Reilly and the rest of that godforsaken crowd.
They've had their heads stuffed full of crap, and they've paid for the privilege. They have paid for the privilege at every turn. That's the great joke in all this.
Good God.
I mean, that guy, Mr. Stack, Mr. Blow His Stack, Joe Blow His Stack, that guy not only owned an airplane, but he apparently had been doing this tax dodge for several years, and when he got caught, he attempted to, you know, go through a lawyer or something like that. And when he finally got the bill and found out how much he actually owed, which he should have known because he'd been doing this for years, I don't know if you saw the Salon article, but they did a pretty good job of outlining the tax dodge that he had tried to do. And, I can understand his anger that he was using a section of the tax code that no longer applied to software engineers because it had never been intended for software engineers. It had always been intended for CEOs and vice presidents and those sort of people. I can understand his anger. I'd be pissed, too.
But wait, okay, let's connect another dot then, Matt.
Uh-huh.
Where can you tune in one's AM radio and hear ads for tax problems with the IRS? We've been in business for 45 years, and we've got former IRS agents working for us. We'll get you off.
That's right.
Where do you tune into? Where do you tune in to hear that, Matt?
It's on TV every night. You can find it all up and down the AM.
Oh, but there's one place in particular that's absolutely filthy with it.
Clark Channel.
Right.
Is that it?
Right Wing Hate Radio.
Right.
It'll run right after the buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is your best hedge against inflation in these uncertain economic times when we may wind up eating human flesh because the president is a Negro. It runs right after it.
Yeah. This guy was basically getting screwed by everybody. He was doing a tax dodge. Somebody probably sold him on the tax dodge. That's my impression. He probably got sold on this tax dodge by somebody who said, "I know how you can get away with paying no taxes." And, you know,
And again, just to reinforce, who promulgates that crap? Why wait?
Yes.
Just stand still at any meeting where the LaRouchers show up
And they'll start with, did you know that the income tax is illegal and unconstitutional and it weren't really ratified and we need to stop paying our income taxes and...
Cuckoo.
And then you got... And you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, people... Well, you know, the Lyndon LaRouche people, they're really a fringe element. Fringe my ass! Now,
although
we're going to take him...
Obama with the Hitler mustache? They all say LaRouche pack in the corner?
And we're going to take a minute here and just hear how mainstream the LaRouches have gotten.
Oh, play it.
Pilot who flew himself into an IRS building. Do you think his attack, his terrorist attack, was motivated at all by a lot of the anti-tax rhetoric that's popular in America right now?
I think if we abolished the IRS back when I first advocated it, he wouldn't have had a target for his airplane. And I'm still for abolishing the IRS. I've been for it for 30 years. And I'm for a national sales tax that solves everybody's tax problem. Every single bit of tax reform that's proposed by any other proposal is better done by a national sales tax, by a fair tax. It does them all. It does them all better. And it also shifts America towards personal responsibility. It fixes our balance of trade. It improves the competitiveness of American manufactured goods by 28% compared to foreign countries. And we just simply can't get to the logical approach of how we reform taxes in America to stimulate our economy. So it's sad that the incident happened down in Texas, but by the same token, the IRS is an agency that's unnecessary. And when the day comes that that is over and we've abolished the IRS, it'll be a happy day for all Americans.
So some of his grievances were legitimate.
I don't know if his grievances were legitimate. I read part of the material. I can tell you that I've been audited by the IRS, and I've had the sense of, why is the IRS in my kitchen? Why do they have their thumb in the middle of my back?
Okay, here's the multiple choice question. The guy saying all this stuff is A semi-freaky Lyndon LaRoucher wandering at the fringes of CPAC. B, some birther, bagger, tenther, deather, truther. C, the ranking Republican from Iowa, Representative Steve King, who sits in the House of Representatives and has done so for 20 or 30 years.
Bob, you remember about a year ago?
That would be C, Matt.
Yes. You remember when Paul Krugman said that he no longer saw a difference between the GOP and the black helicopter talk radio guys?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I saw this coming for 20 years. This is the conservative movement now. It has been infected by this right-wing thing that isn't even conservative, as far as I'm concerned. I think we need to just demolish the word conservative because it no longer means what they think it means. But before I get off...
The Princess Bride moment? That word. I don't think it means what they think it means.
You know what? You need a sound clip of that. You need sound clips that you can play of this stuff.
I do. What I need is a producer.
You need a producer. I'll be your producer. I'll go up to West Virginia and produce you.
Oh, you know, and we got Sue ready to do the video end of things. You know, lottery, play that lottery. It's only 11 miles to the state line from where you are, Matt. Drive up and buy your ticket.
I'll participate in the Texas lottery. I'll educate the kids of Texas in the hope of being, you know, a big winner. Hey, listen, I have one more thing I wanted to tell you before I got up here. Okay, all right. You know the word Al-Qaeda?
Yes, yes.
You know what it means, right?
The base.
Right.
Al being the definite article and Qaeda being base.
Yes. Now, it comes from the root word qaada, which means to sit down or take a seat. Qaeda is a foundation, a groundwork, a basis, a fundament, a base, a support.
An underpinning.
Yes, a foot, a pedestal, a chassis, an undercarriage. Yes, and in one particular usage, you can use it as a military base. You can also use it as a principle or maxim. It is used in religious language to discuss dogma and religion. And, yes, a popular base.
So let me see if I know where you're going. When George Bush stood in front of that group of millionaires and said... some people call you the have mores. I call you my base. You know, George Bush could have said, I call you my CADA.
Yes. That's exactly how you would translate it into Arabic.
So in other words, the teabagger movement is, and the right-wing religion industry are all playing to the right-wing CADA in America.
Yes. Yes, isn't it?
Oh, lovely? I think we have a new theme to work, Matt.
I think we do. Again, this comes from my Arabic-English dictionary, Hansberry Dictionary of Modern Written Arabic, edited by J.M. Cullen. Taxpayer supplied, still smells like Kuwait.
Hoo-wee!
Actually, Kuwait has an interesting salty smell.
Don't want to know.
Well, Bob, thanks a lot. I'm going to get off the air.
Oh, Matt, this has been a joy.
Yeah, it has. I'll talk to you later.
All right, see ya. Bye now.
Bye.
That, if you don't already know, is Matt Osborne from OsborneInc.com. OsborneInc.com. And, of course, you can read Matt's musings by going to said website. He also appears at Huffington Post from time to time. And he is the Horn's Southeast correspondent. Now, with that in mind, let me throw one more thing out there. This is from Sue. And this sort of dovetails nicely with some of the stuff that Matt was talking about. This is Sue's nominee for Moran Monday. She writes, this one comes from the more proof that Repiglicans and libertarians should never be left in charge of anything file. Thomas the World is Flat Friedman wrote in his New York Times column yesterday that the fat lady has sung. He told the tale of how Tracy, California residents are now either going to have to pay $48 a year additional charge for unlimited calls or be charged as much as $300 for each time they call 911. That's right. If you don't pay the extra $48 a year and someone breaks into your house, it's going to cost you $300 to call 911 if you want help right away. The mayor of Tracy, Brent Ives, gets campaign backing from former California Repiglican Congressman Richard Pombo. This is actually a story within a story, but I digress, Sue says. In Friedman's article, he goes off on this whining kick about how much less city governments are able to do for its citizens thanks to the need for governments everywhere to cut services. He whines and he whines and then he whines some more. And, of course, this is editorial on my part. This is not what Sue wrote. Tracy, California is experiencing things that other city governments and municipalities and counties and so forth are experiencing all over the country. Witness what was, you know, the severe draconian cutback in services by the city of Boulder, Colorado. You know, where Jesus lives. Well, he splits time between the United States Air Force Academy and the headquarters of Focus on the Family, but they're both in the same place. So, yeah, Boulder, Colorado, where Jesus lives, and where they quit mowing the grass or won't mow the grass when it starts growing again next year. But Sue says, but wait, isn't this what Friedman wanted? He wanted lower wages, which leads to lower tax revenues, which leads to reductions in what governments can do. In fact, he advocates sending American jobs overseas, which eliminates tax revenues altogether so that we can be competitive. He's made a bloody fortune off of promoting that economic model. His writings are the reasons Ayn Randians and libertarians everywhere masturbate so frequently. Poor business is overregulated. The American peasant working class is overpaid. And rich people like him are overtaxed.
Taxed enough already.
And now he expects us to believe he's doing us all some huge-ass goddamn favor by exposing the results of his own economic utopia? It's like he's an effing wife-beater who comes riding in on a shit-stained white horse acting like he's somehow outraged that the government is taking things away from people when this is exactly what he wanted all along. St. Ronnie of Raygun trickles down golden shower praise on dear Thomas every day for advancing the cause of supply-side economics so convincingly. Friedman is no different than Joe Stack. Neither one wants to pay a dime in taxes, but expects the services they are most likely to utilize to be there for them on demand. Stack, with his $250,000 home and his private airplane and his private hangar, felt he was part of America's peasant working class. Friedman, who helped create America's peasant working class, is now trying to cash in again on their misery by writing articles about how unfair things are for them. If Friedman could get his $9 million Maryland mansion to fly, ooh, Maryland mansion, good one, Sue, he would have done beat Stack to the IRS building. And just as an aside, Friedman has a daughter in her mid-20s with a name that matches another neocon moonbat's name, Orly. Seriously, I'm not making this up. I've not been able to confirm if Orly Friedman believes President Obama was born in Zimbabwe on a Kenyan rug under the light of an Australian birth certificate while his mother was playing a communist ukulele and his daddy was doing a Marxist ceremonial dance around a sombrero made in China, like Orly Tates does. You guys are making this a seriously, seriously busy Moran Monday. I haven't had time for a music break. And for those of you who have been in the DJ business, you know what that means. But we're going to keep rolling because the daggum phone lines are blinking at me like Christmas in a hurricane. So we roll on and we see what's shaking. Okay? A lot of people out there with no flipping patience. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, speaking of Orly Tate, you did see that picture that I believe Sparky posted in the chat room that she's applying for protection from the UN or some BS like that?
Yeah, because she's what, a political persecutee or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, what? Somebody brought her a cold cup of coffee?
Death threat. Death threat. Oh no.
Death threats to Orly Tate? Who would possibly think she could ever be worth it?
Yeah, that is a good question. Why even bother? I mean, she's already, you know, pretty much proven herself a wackadoodle. But then again, I have a feeling that she's just simply paranoid.
Oh, look, she's a goober. Don't waste 10 cents worth of brain cells on that woman. She's a nutbag.
That's not the primary reason why I called. I just, like, you know, you mentioned her, so I had to bring it up.
Right.
For our non-chat room people, you crazy people. But yeah, I mean, just to give you an idea of how marvelous the corporate mentality is, apparently, my marvelous employer, they've apparently decided to close every garden center in all of Target. But here's the thing. They haven't officially told us employees, but they told last month. They told their vendor.
Oopsie.
Yeah.
Well, what did you guys? Did the people working in the garden center at Target try to organize like the meat cutters did in Walmart a decade or so back?
No, not as far as I'm aware of. It's a simple matter of trying to save money.
And the geez.
Yeah, it's pure money. Because apparently even the stores that, you know, sell crap loads of plants, which are all in California, only 1% of the store's sales or profits.
Well, there it goes.
Yeah, and even better is that, you know, the plant vendor, they get 80% of the profits from every single frickin' plant that's sold. Ain't that pretty?
Beautiful.
Yes. But yeah, they don't even have the class to tell us that it's closing in September. They're just like, but they'll tell the vendors.
Well, that's because they've got to save the money. You know, they've got a 30-day backout clause on the contract or some such. And so,
yeah.
You know, you guys, you know, you're at-will employees, so you don't get told because they don't have a back-out contract with you. They don't have a loophole. You're an at-will employee, and they can can you for no reason or any reason.
Well, even the store managers are. There seems to be, at least at my individual store, there seems to be a big old purge on the management staff of the store.
Well, that's because the managers are making too much.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's as it stands right now at my particular store, there's only one manager that has been at that store for more than a year.
Well, it's the model. It's the model, you know. And you know, it was first perfected in the fast food industry, where you know where McDonald's would hire and fire high school kids as soon as they rose up, you know, 25 cents past minimum wage or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, and that kind of treatment is now a business model.
Yeah, it's just. You know.
And it's. I'm also being told, David in Tennessee says they told the vendors because they might need a vendor that might need that vendor come better times. Target employees, they can have a new crop of those in weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, remember, the machine is more important than the person. As a buddy of mine used to say, for instance, in talking about the coal industry, a coal company cares more about a drop of rain than a human being, because a drop of rain might fall on a piece of equipment. The piece of equipment might get a spot of rust on it. The rust might spread. And then you'd have to spend some actual money getting the machine fixed. On the other hand, miner gets killed in the hole, or, you know, up on the strip job or whatever. Well, hell, there's another guy to replace him before the body's cold.
Oh, certainly.
And that is the American business at-will contract model.
But the best part of it is that, you know, since Walmart is so hated, people think that Target is so much better. And it's like, no. They've been sinking quite quickly over the last few years.
Well, and that's because the Walmart is, of course, hell-bent on burying Target.
Yeah.
Because, you know, again, it's anarcho-Randianism. Ultimately, Walmart's goal is to be the only retail outlet in the United States. They want to be the Soviet Goom department store. If they don't have it, you don't need it. And what they do have, they'll charge two prices for and pay, you know, a tenth of that in actual cost to some Chinese manufacturing firm using slave labor. It's a beautiful dodge, you know, if you're Walmart, if you're Target.
Yes. If you're, oops.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, they don't remember that one, you know, do you remember that one episode of The Twilight Zone, The Obsolete Man, where, you know, the whole thing focused on the trial where they determine who's obsolete or not, and like the bailiff or whatever, it focused on him, and in the end, guess who was obsolete due to technology? They don't realize it.
No, not in the least. Not in the least. Well, yeah. You know, are you going to be okay?
Oh, I'm going to be fine. I mean, I know how to do stuff in there. Rest of the store, so, you know, theoretically I'm fine. It's just, you know, like, just, you know, just thanks, guys. Thanks for letting me know.
Yeah, because you know, you're a member of, you're a teammate. You're an associate, probably, or God knows what they're calling people, you know, retail clerks anymore.
Team members.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
You're a team member?
Yeah.
Except the team, right. Jesus. These predatory sons of bitches.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have my fingers crossed for you, and keep us up to date on this, would you?
Yeah, I'll be sure to let you know when they officially tell us.
All right, cool.
Sit down.
All right, I'll talk to you later, Garrett. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye now. From Vegas, that's our buddy Garrett, and onward we roll. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Brian from New Hampshire.
Hey, Brian, what's up?
Okay, what was Garrett just talking about there? What was that? I had to be away from the phone.
Well, just that, you know, another screwing of the working class being propagated by one of the major nationwide retail outlets. You know, they're going to can their garden center.
because it's not quite profitable enough in these lean economic times. So naturally, the human beings are the ones who get slashed.
Yeah, that's... like you were talking about, I guess you, a 68-year-old Vietnam veteran, the IRS worker there was killed there. And that was the guy that did that Stack was he was no Vietnam veteran. He was 53, right? And
right. He was just a, and I mean this in no chronological. I mean this in an emotional sense. He was a spoiled baby, Brian.
He was a failed corporatist or something like that. It's not, but he's worried about his it's to me it's like the same idea is that, you know, we had to let George Bush Jr. in there because it make him feel better about his life in 2000 and then again in the steal in 2004, you know, because he was always just the black sheep of the family, you know, that party boy George. They had to let him do something that made him look respectable, like hand him the presidency, whatever these...
Yeah, and Glenn Beck has the nerve to complain about people, about the liberals who give trophies to everybody for just participating. The presidency of the United States was turned into a participation trophy for a spoiled son of privilege for 8 years, Brian.
And they had plenty, believe me, they had plenty in the millions there, but they wanted it in the billions and beyond there from the war profiteering, and they've got that now with the oil for the wars for the oil corporations and, you know, September 11th. And you know, you just had Matt Osborne on there. And he's such a brave. He's kind of a head-on newsman type of guy, or a head-on researcher type of guy. There, I'm almost thinking, is he related at all? I'm thinking his great uncle has got to be Super Dave Osborne. You know, that stunt driver there, and those crazy stunt there. I remember the rescue crew driving over him, and his body just.
Who got his start on the Smothers Brothers show.
Bouncing along underneath the huge truck.
Right.
And then Dave somehow gets up there. Super Dave somehow stands up and just, you know, slowly, of course, you gotta, you know, for the spinal cord, you gotta be careful after that kind of, but he seems to have that kind of guts, you know, but probably not though, right? He's probably not with that super.
Well, I think we probably ought to take up a collection for a nice fedora and a trench coat for Matt.
For Matt, okay, that's right. There you go. That'll show the type of guy he is. But the guy there, I think he was this Stack guy was a what they've been calling those Iraqi insurgents for years now. And most of them who were from the Saudi Arabian Gulf state there, they were enraged at seeing Islamic and Arabic men, et cetera, tortured by America in Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo. So the torture didn't make us stronger. It made tens of thousands and thousands of American deaths and tens of thousands of casualties from these suicide bombers going into the occupied Iraq and now occupied Afghanistan. So these lying Republicans on air, but it's the same idea as, you know, he's talking about, the Iraqi insurgents, they called them, and I agree with that, though. I mean, just to get to a couple of American soldiers, these Iraqi suicide bombers, some were so ruthless, they would kill even a bunch of kids that were gathered around them for candy or whatever, and that they were homicide bombers, and this guy was a homicide bomber, this Stack guy. He was a criminal and a terrorist, obviously.
But being white, we can't call him that, Brian.
He's a white Texan, too.
You don't know. I guess there's some sort of immunity conferred by white skin that makes it impossible for one to be a terrorist, especially when one is right wing.
Well, up here was still, I guess, in New Hampshire, it's still a mighty white state there. But the fact is that Matt Osborne, he's got his great the stuff he does out of Alabama there. They've had something up here called the New Hampshire Gazette. It goes back to 1756.
Yep.
NHGazette.com, founded by Daniel Fowle. It goes back to they've had this story up there for years. You go to nhgazette.com by John Buchanan, who was one of the writers there, but a great journalist about the Bush Nazi link confirmed. And just after 60 years of inattention and even denial by the U.S. media, newly uncovered government documents in the National Archives and Library of Congress do reveal that Prescott Bush, the grandfather of George W. Bush, served as a business partner of an U.S. banking operative for the financial architect of the Nazi war machine from 1926 until 1942, when Congress took aggressive action against Bush and his enemy national, quote-unquote, partners. The documents also show that Bush and his colleagues, according to reports from the U.S. Department of the Treasury and FBI, tried to conceal their financial alliance with German industrial Fritz Thyssen, a steel and coal baron, and they were making much of their money there as they became occupied, Nazi-occupied Europe there in Nazi Germany, that from slave labor, basically, and from death camp labor, too, the, this Thyssen and the... But it goes on to there, the German industrials Fritz Thyssen, a steel and coal baron who, beginning in the mid-1920s, personally funded Adolf Hitler's rise to power by the subversion of democratic principle and German law.
Yeah, he was known as Hitler's angel.
Yeah, and it goes on from there with about the role in the Harriman, the Avril Harriman, their connection to him, and George Herbert Walker, too, Prescott Bush's father-in-law, President Bush's maternal great-grandfather, continued their dealings with the German industrial baron for nearly 8 months after the U.S. entered the war. And also they say they can continue to get some profits from this dealing with Union Banking Corporation, the Bush crime family did up until at least 1952-53. And those millions upon millions of dollars there, they were sitting pretty from that. And much of that is made, you know, they talk about, John McCain, he might have had some ancestors who were slave owners and slave labor owners for these plantations. They made huge profits by working those poor fellow human beings to death, basically. You know, that's what slavery is there. We talk about how Haiti, it rose up against that kind of evil. And that's the evil itself, was the slavery. So the exact opposite. The Haitians made no deal with the devil. They were fighting against the devil. The French imposed slavery against them.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. But the fact is, the Bush crime family, they've had some, I believe, some people descended from slave families have donated huge amounts to, you know, the NAACP or the United Negro College Fund or all kinds of, and it thinks just for lower class people and for African American people especially, they recognize that their ancestry, it's much of it is the so-called profits, quote unquote, are stolen profits from the labor of slaves and just people that are. It just immigrant workers for centuries too in this country, but the slavery was the worst, obviously, and the Nazis had much of this slave labor camps and these death camp labor, and the Bush family made millions basically off of this. They haven't been taken to task for any of this, and they haven't been forced to pay back anything to, you know, to whatever, B'nai B'rith or the nation state of Israel or something to make amends, for God's sake. They don't know. They don't have a concept of that thing. They don't. That's the same idea of like the, you know, reciprocal human civilization relationship. Like this guy, you know, talking about he's so oppressed because he's got to pay taxes. This stack.
Yeah.
This is such selfishness. Greed is good. That was just a movie, though. The Wall Street movie was that Greed is Good. Michael Douglas is the guy.
Yeah, but don't think. Yeah, but that thing rose up on the backs of that movie Wall Street was the Gordon Gekko character was pure Randian. I mean he's a character drawn straight out of the pages of anything that Ayn Rand wrote.
And pure cynical politician as well as just to go with anything that makes the profit. If you wanted to make Gordon Gekko into a politician of today's America, he could be either Scott Brown, the new senator from Massachusetts, or the guy, the former governor from Massachusetts, ironically, too, Mitt Romney, the both Republicans. They talk about the strongly liberal Massachusetts. No, there's reactionary fascism infesting everywhere in this country, Bob, that is just and it's the kind of thing, it's strengthened when you got this, like this, it's really backed up by real fact-searching, this Nazi link and the Bush crime family, the Prescott Bush, especially with working with the Nazis, and it's never covered because people are afraid. I admit it; I'm afraid too of the Bush crime family, but I don't want to. But you got to have the honest truth come out.
And you know, if there was a media failure, it was in that John Buchanan story, Brian. It really was.
God, that was
because no one has ever refuted. No,
in 2003 that it's come out and it's.
And no one ever refuted it. That's the important part. No one ever refuted it. And maybe the one or two. Yeah, and one or two times that it even saw the light of day inside the for-profit media. Do you know what the excuse used for leaving it alone was? Do you remember this, Brian? It was, well, that's his grandfather. And, you know, we live in a country that doesn't visit the sins of the father upon the sun, and it's unfair to bring that up. And yet we live here in 2010, Brian, in a time when, lo and behold, the President of the United States is not free to be the President of the United States precisely because of who it is alleged his father was.
That's right, and because it also they talk about, they did bring it up just for a second there, that one of the co-hosts there on that View show there, she's beautiful, Jewish-American, real New Yorkese, charming lady there, I forget her name. Oh, Joy Behar, Joyce Behar? Or
yeah, Joy Behar.
Joy Behar, yeah. She's a really charming lady, and really, and then the blonde, there's a lot of intelligent blonde women I see out in the streets, New Hampshire and America and all over the world every day. I don't like to get into the blondism, but this girl... was with that she was talking about, well, if you're going to talk about the grandfather of George W. Bush, she didn't even want to mention that this about the years, 1926 to 1942, that he was backing up the Nazi banking operation, Prescott Bush. She didn't even really mention it, but she just said, you want to bring that up? You got to bring up the Barack Obama. You know, we've got to blame the 9-year-old Barack Obama for knowing that William Ayers character, that terrorist fiend there back in 1968. Well, what were we going to do? He might have had a Molotov cocktail hidden in his lunchbox there, young Barack Obama. What are we going to do, Joy? What are we going to do? You know, this is the nuttiness we got is passing his journalism. I sometimes question. I know you, why you do, Bob. You love football, but why did most people have cable TV? is what I'm asking it sometimes. But at the same time, I've got to admit that much of the internet is being overwhelmed.
Well, look, Brian. I know no better analogy than this.
As a journalist, you have to have it. I know.
Let's get something clear. I am not a journalist.
Okay, you're a commentator, but you're...
I'm strictly an opinion guy. Now, if I have to go...
You're not interested in a propagandistic opinion. You're not interested in... If I said that, George W. Prescott Bush, I also have evidence that he was hiding out Nazi operatives in Paraguay and Argentina just after World War II ended, and I have personal proof of this, you're going to say to me, well, Brian, you better show some real...
Yeah, pony it up.
Multi-source it, Brian, with multiple, believable sources, and show me where I can go to get that information before I'm going to really take you seriously on that charge. Because
it's the same.
You don't believe in propagandistic.
Right. It's the same thing as the Tim Tebow's mama ad on the Super Bowl that I mentioned, and that is that no for-profit journalist out there, would make the basic inquiry into that woman's story. Because it was never questioned. It was swallowed whole. It was accepted as received knowledge and subject to no scrutiny, no inquiry. But what I was gonna say a minute ago, is that I have been a journalist.
Yeah, you have.
But I do not hold myself to be one. You know, we clown around and we have fun and we carry on and so forth. And I try to deliver facts and I try to let people know when I'm playing and when I'm being deadly in earnest.
Yeah.
You're
a muckraker, but you're a muckraker for truth. It's like the former humorist, and he was always a truth seeker about the Kennedy assassination. You know, Dick Gregory, he always said, you gotta be, as a true activist, you gotta be a real agitator. That's what the part of the washing machine that really gets the clothes clean is. It really gets into the dirt spots. It gets into places where maybe people don't want to go, but that's the only way you keep our republic alive.
Exactly. Exactly.
We have to dig it. I'm going back to this September 11, 2007 story at opednews.com. Carol Woolman, she's talking about, you remember the meltdown, the economic meltdown and Wall Street meltdown and the mortgages, they really set in with a vengeance from about early 2008 onward, especially in the summer and fall of 2008. But she's going back to, and this gets back to, we've covered this before, the SEC person and the staff, really, number of them that had huge evidence against this Madoff guy, but the Bush administration basically pushed them away from, don't touch this guy, he's a favored or whatever. He's just a free market at work there. You just have to believe his stated profits are, or his, But the fact is, some of Congressman Paul Gilmore of Republican Ohio was found dead in his home. This is back in September 2007. It was reported initially as a heart attack until word leaked out that he had blunt trauma to the head and neck. Now we're being told that he fell down the stairs. Gilmore was investigating a series of option trades and suspicious someone is betting billions of dollars on the market that the market will fall 50% by September 21st. You know, these hedge funds, these hedge bettors, these bastards, it's one thing to do the bear racetrack or a horse track or something, go do that then, but you don't do that with the American national economy, for God's sake. they've had so much free reign, especially since September 11th, but and it goes on. Even with the housing crisis, it would take a major catastrophe like a terrorist quote-unquote attack to precipitate such a plunge. As part of his job on the House Finance Committee, Gilmore was investigating this deal. Was he murdered because he was about to reveal something? And with this death, on top of the deaths of Senator Wellstone and Carnahan, Missouri, and the anthraxing of Senators Daschle and Leahy, have a chilling effect on people on Congress. Maybe that's why they're spineless, quote-unquote, and it goes on for... But, you know, and is that maybe why Harry Reid is not really energetic about really making populist reforms? Is that why, Bob, you know, about really helping the real people out instead of, you know, and why Barack Obama maybe too? It just, you know, I don't know what to make of all this. I wish I had voted for Cynthia McKinney. I admit it.
Well, there are a lot of people who did, and I don't take issue with them.
But at the same time, you know, it's like you say there too. Then you come right back to the Senator McCain's skin cancer if he makes it becomes fatal someday, and then the news announcements, President Sarah Palin. Then I realize why I had to vote.
As frustrated as I am with him, there's every indication, and I know it'll piss people off, but there's every indication that I will vote because I'll vote for Obama in 2012. Because
I understand.
It's frustrating as hell because you want Barack Obama to be the Barack Obama can be.
Yeah, but I also want him to keep alive and safe and healthy and his wonderful young family and all that too. But maybe it just should have been a... Who's that? Was it that? I just saw that actor Will Smith. I remember. I just saw a bit of it from the character of the Men in Black and all that too. That maybe an unattached African American or any from any ancestry, a bachelor American with no family, no close in young kids and things like that, to where they make these right wingers make a widow out of him, and then you have another guy right in line behind him, so they can't kill us off fast enough to stop the reform, and at the same time to hunt them down, the killers, like the coward that was hiding there in that grassy knoll, November 22nd, 1963. That was a coward. You call him sniper, assassin, all this stuff, a glamorous crap. That was an evil killer, just like that Stack guy. I'm always going to be against them, Bob, even if I don't have the power. Sometimes I just want to hop on a plane with my cousin Kevin to South Korea, but I don't think I'm going to do that.
Somebody's going to stay here and fight, Brian.
But that we're going to miss his lovely New Yorkese, Brooklynese, Jamaican, and Irish brogue there. I'm going to miss you, Kevin. But I can see why he may have to make that choice. But the Republic may be doomed in the New York City area, at least if he does that. But I wish him the best. I can see why. It's sometimes some Americans, whatever.
Drawing a comparison between the two, Brian. But honest to God, I mentioned it earlier in the program. Consider. Yeah. The grown daughter of Joe Stack said in an interview that she's sorry her daddy committed murder, but that his intentions, his gripes about the government were legitimate. She said that from a place where she has fully subsidized health care. She said that from a place that has a working social safety net.
Yeah.
She said that from a place that has a working, fully, largely fully functional governmental infrastructure, where people have a decent lifestyle, where people don't starve on the streets. She said that, Brian, from Norway. And so far, I think we're the only people who have commented on the irony involved with that.
Really, you talk about the truest, the truest, purest, and the great socialist governments on this planet right now, I would say, would be the Denmark and the three great Scandinavian nation states there. They would be at the head of that. Dear God, does a woman, does she commute to and from Norway from some other planet or something? Or
And just to give you an idea of what the rest of the world is thinking about, let me share with you a comment that came in from our buddy Scott in Sweden.
Okay.
Scott dropped me a note today about sort of abortive quality of Friday's program because we had bandwidth issues. But he said, among other things. He said, I'm glad to hear the new callers. I hope this means we're growing. And it does, Scott. And he says, saw a couple of Penn State hoops games on TV. What the hell is it with the white T-shirts with huge crosses on them in the student cheering section? And that was just that gave me the shivers. He said, is this only at PSU, or is there a new, even more aggressive, holier-than-thou Christ wave going on?
Oh, my God.
And then he said, relatedly, at the Winter Olympics, you know, which means something to the Swedes, being how winter is their official season, damn near everybody on every interview we've heard with a U.S. athlete is all about patriotism and representing the country. Ad nauseam, Scott says. All the EU athletes talk about much more mundane things like, well, our vaccine team had a good day, or our vaccine team had a bad day, or I couldn't focus, or I trained hard and got lucky today. This may seem like a small thing to point out, but it does indicate that the propagandizing of the American athlete must be intense. The Cold War lives, America uber alles. And he says, P.S., Swedish TV announcers almost birthed a calf when they overheard the Wired for Sound American men's curling team. Curling, Brian! Curling! Okay?
Oh, my God. Yep.
Curling team referring to our guys as bastards and quipping lines such as, if we play this stone here, they, meaning the Swedes, will be shot. The pushy American USA, USA chant and incessant we're number one mentality has a lot of people here rooting for anybody but an American in every sport. The U.S. has become the world's J.R. Ewing.
Oh, my God.
And he got...
I just talked about him last week there, the Larry Hagman, that great... He plays a heavy really well there, like he played...
Well, I knew that would speak to you because you had brought it up. That's why I shared it.
I love Larry Hagman much more in the I Dream a Genie, officer, the Air Force officer or NASA test pilot character there. That was the slapstick comedy, Larry Hagman. And he did a remake of the Blob movie, you know, the 1958 movie.
Right.
1972 with Godfrey Cambridge and a couple of other Hollywood...
Godfrey Cambridge, oh my God.
But he really... Yeah, but I see what you say about real heavy we're becoming to the rest of the world. They keep thinking, they want to keep us like it's always 1980 and it's always just after the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan and it's the hockey team that's not supposed to win against the Russian team and all that. And it's always, this is horse hockey, as, you know, that commander of that MASH unit there used to say, the MASH base there. This is what it is. To put it politely, you can't politicize things. Athletics is supposed, even the ancient Greeks, you talk, it's supposed to be very primitive in terms of war and violence.
Yeah, but it's worth
sense of an honor, but they cut off their wars during the time of peace and
they declared a moratorium on wars, but by the same token, those were not amateur athletes at the Olympics. In fact, the most profound wrestlers, et cetera, in the original games. Do you know, Brian, and I kid you not, The Greeks, instead of bathing in water, they cleaned themselves with olive oil.
Because
I guess they had more olive oil than clean water. But the means by which they would clean themselves is they would oil themselves up real good, and having done that, they would have a slave or, you know, somebody take this little sort of curved, almost like a scythe type device. I forget what the word for it is. But then they would scrape the ick off of their body with the oil, and then they'd sort of shake that stuff into a bucket. And then, just to let you know that the Olympics are no more commercialized now than they were in the days of the ancients, they would then bottle and sell that filthy goop to adoring women as an aphrodisiac.
I like it. Yeah, that's
sorry. I mean,
Heracles' own, genetic material there. That, you know, maybe some woman, I can see why they'd be turned on from it. You know, that I think the real Heracles or Hercules of history, he didn't look a damn thing like Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, the Terminator, the robot governor there, and his Hercules in New York character there. And I think the little New Yorkese guy, Harold Stang, stole that movie there too. The streetwise guy there, Hercules in New York, but yeah, that's the real ancient Greeks. They were, they had a sense of honor, though, to their Olympics, and they had a sense of brotherhood. And also
did you know that in ancient Greece there was even marketing and PR? Some of the best poets of the ancient world were paid by leading athletes to write verses about them.
Wow.
Now, how's, you know, how's that any different than, say, Peyton Manning getting a Wheaties deal?
That's right. No, that's true. But I get a sense that, like you're saying, that, I hope they don't ever become too Americanized, a great nation state like Sweden or Denmark or Norway. That girl actually said that from Norway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she did. And just to reinforce what you just said, Brian, Scott also adds, hang in there, Bob. The Swedes are having a very good Olympics, meaning we've beat the Norwegians a few times. If you think Harvard versus Yale is brutal, wait till you get to Swedes versus Norwegians.
They could have some.
Right. You know, because when the Vikings weren't beating the shit out of the rest of the world, they were beating each other half out of their senses. We've beaten the Norwegians a few times on the ski trails instead of getting swept away, which is really all that ever matters. That and beating the Finns 3-0 in hockey. Actual medals are just manna from heaven, Scott says. And then he offers this weather report. And even for a man in the depths of a New Hampshire winter, Brian, you've got to enjoy this. Scott says, 20 below this morning and another 6 inches of powder. It's so effing beautiful right now that one wonders why we ever dread winter. Maggie the most, and I know how much you love Casper, so you'll appreciate Scott's love for his pups. He says, Maggie the mostly retriever and Blackie the knuckle-headed giant schnauzoid sink up to their sides. One more good snow and they'll have to walk with their snouts in the air like U-boat snorkels for breathing. I'm hoping for that. What a sight that'll be. And Scott says,
imagery there.
And he says, the deep well heat pump is working like a charm, and our share in a large wind turbine covers the heat pump input. We haven't done the math yet, but we are close to breaking even, meaning no net CO2 over the year. It's within reach, even way up here. We'll just keep buying shares until we are net green producers.
And so, that oil-rich Alaska and Northwest Canada area there in Vancouver, they have to fly the snow in, basically, right, to the Vancouver for those games now, to that area.
Right.
They have to fight. And just one last thing, those great nations, say, in Denmark and Norway, Sweden, I think it's much more likely that a Danish athlete or from wherever in Europe during their spare time might read Soren Kierkegaard's great words than an American athlete will ever waste their time, quote unquote, but it's not a waste of time, on a true Harvard lad, a true good lad named Henry David Thoreau, or that kind of writing to really get them in the right state of mind those are some fierce sports too. I don't deny the bravery that, you know, God love the man that from Georgia that died on the luge. We always have to have respect for the kind of risk and the sacrifices athletes make from wherever they come from. But we could, the American athletes are not anything. There's nothing godlike about us. Like our military, everywhere we plant our foot, sometimes it looks like it's going to plant the heel of corporatism completely on the earthquake-ridden people of Haiti, and that's not the American. That didn't used to. It was too much the American way, I guess, in our past too. But I think the America of World War II is still the model to go by in terms of not for war, but just to free people and actually think of war as a very rare, but a sacred thing. Well, that is almost like the ancient Greeks.
There you go.
That really for freedom and the real democracy, not for subjugating people and then on the corporations, and then calling it some kind of progressive or neoliberalism or democracy. It's just a phony bunch of profiteers. That's all they are. And again, it's the Bush crime family, the Nazi family. It's the same with this homicide bomber stack. I'll let you go, though, Bob. Have a good
All right, Brian, it's been a great conversation this evening. You take care.
See, I can stay warm with my own hot air, no matter how bad it is up here.
And tell Casper we said hi.
Okay, he loves you guys. Bye-bye.
All right, later. Bye-bye. And that's Brian calling from New Hampshire. Listen, guys, I hope you won't mind. I'm going to take a little break. Just need a little break here, and we'll come back to your phone calls. I got three lines blinking. I don't know if there's anybody behind them. You know, again, it's a one-man show here. But I got three lines blinking, four lines open. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head on. And you know what this is. You know what you're listening to. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. And the fact of the matter is, we are the horn. We'll be right back.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org. or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Minutes past the hour on this Moran Monday edition of The Horn. I am, of course, Bob, and you're whoever you happen to be when I press the go button on the phone line. You know the numbers, 877-443-2366, or, of course, on your nickel, 304-658-3333. A little piece of information for you. With all the weird... With all the weird deification and lionization of that creep, Joseph Stack, I thought you might want, and frankly, the fact that so many people are ignoring the horror that Joseph Stack visited upon the family of Vernon Hunter. I thought you might like to send a note of condolence. And our buddy, our dear friend Jude, took the trouble of finding the address of Mr. Hunter's church. And he attended the Greater Mount Zion Baptist Church, direct your card of condolence to Pastor Gaylord Clark, just like it sounds. Attention, Pastor Gaylord Clark and the Vernon Hunter family. The address is 1801 Pennsylvania Avenue. 1801 Pennsylvania Avenue, Austin, A-U-S-T-I-N, Austin, Texas, 78702.
And given the fact that we do have, although they don't get onto the program, we do have the hate-filled right-wing freakish lurkers. You know, I get the emails. Jude had the forethought to suggest, yes, sending them through Pastor Clark. Jude said, I thought Pastor Clark may want to read cards before he sends them on to Mr. Hutter's family. And she says, also, this is one way we can shift the energy of a tragic situation and place the focus where it needs to be. Hear, hear. Thank you, Jude. Thank you very, very much. A couple of other things. Reminders coming in from Ron and Raleigh that, yes, the sequel to Wall Street will hit your local Hell Octoplex movie theater this summer. Gordon Gekko gets out of jail and tries to reestablish himself in the new world of high finance. Eesh. Also noting, does Ron and Raleigh, after I mentioned Walmart's goal to become the Goom department store, I haven't heard anyone mention the Goom in years. I spoke to a young lady that works at my local grocer. She's been employed at the same store for 10 years, and she makes $11 an hour after 10 years' service. And this, says Ron, is the shape of things to come. And a reminder, tomorrow night we will be live on location at West Virginia State University in Institute, West Virginia, for the Seneca II Forum Lecture Series. And you want to be on hand for that one because, A, it's going to be Robert Perry and Ray McGovern. Robert Perry, of course, of ConsortiumNews.com, one of the last great working real journalists in America today. And you'll want to be there for another reason. It's not going to be just audio. Assuming that all the connections and everything that we need are correct, we will also have a stream of the video up, directions to which have or will be placed at headonradionetwork.com. I had a note from Sue saying that that she would put up a link to it because it will be seen, it will be found at Ustream, the letter U, Ustream, Ustream.tv. And, you know, if a whole bunch of people tune in to watch that thing live, you never know. The Ustream folks might go, holy crap! Who is who are these people? And where did they come from? Wow! You never know where the audience, where the opportunity to make new friends might come from. So just all of that along the way for you. Email coming in from our buddy Joe the Foxhole Atheist. He said, I had the pleasure of watching someone light one of my essays on fire at school last week. He said, after thinking about it, I learned something important and wrote a short piece about it. I thought you might appreciate this. Joe just called it insight. He said, I've never understood peaceful resistance. I always admired those who conducted it, but also pitied them because I thought their effort was in vain. My chosen profession in my early years made it impossible for me to ever understand. If you're a trained killer and a jackbooted thug, you stand against everything good in human society. Unfortunately, that is what I used to be. Now I spend my free time trying to convince people of the need to start fixing the problems we now face. Until a few days ago, I didn't hold any high hopes for success. Then I met a real live fascist in America. He was burning literature. Specifically, something I had recently posted in a public place. Since I'm new to the whole peaceful activism bit, I did not handle the situation well. My urge to rip his head off made it impossible for me to think coherently, much less voice anything meaningful. After 2 days of contemplation, I finally figured it out. The purpose of peaceful demonstration is not to convince others to join your cause. The purpose is not to force Congress to pass a certain law. The purpose is to force the jackboots to reveal their true nature to the general public. Oh, chrome-plated toaster with dual toaster crust dust flaps for Joe. Yes! The purpose is to force the jackboots to reveal their true nature to the general public. My writing harms no one. My voice harms no one. Yet despite this, I have caused the fascists to destroy my writing. This happens daily. Daily I post, and daily they rip, tear, and burn and destroy. For now, I want to thank my jackbooted neighbor. Thank you for teaching me the meaning of what I've been doing. You have given me a powerful new weapon, and as a weapons master, I plan on using it to its maximum effect. Hear, hear.
Hear, hear.
You know, the what Gandhi did in India to drive the British out with nonviolence was done to make the world look and see what the British in India were all about. That they were, in fact, jackbooted thugs. And he succeeded. What Dr. King did was not to get a law necessarily passed. It was to shine a bright light on bigoted, prejudiced hate. And he did. And there was some progress. But now we find ourselves in an America where we degenerate into screeds written by disaffected white guys who were quite sane when they flew the plane out of the hangar that they owned, out of the hangar they owned, and into a federal building that's owned by you and me. And, you know, set fire to his house, too. Yeah, because he was oppressed by the man. Yeah, I just love it when white guys come out. Just another case of the man keeping me down. Whew. Clueless. But I thought, yeah, I thought that kind of had to be shared. A couple of blinking lights, and I'm going to go right to them. I hope there's time to finish out the program with one last story. Hey,
hello?
Welcome to the program. Hey, Juanita.
Hey, I want to make a correction.
Did I screw up?
It doesn't really matter. It's just I'm being anal about it. Is that right?
Okay.
Joy Behar?
Mm-hmm.
She's not Jewish. She's Italian.
Is she?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, like I said, it doesn't matter, but she said a lot of people think she's Jewish because kind of has that voice.
Okay. Well, I made that assumption, too.
Well, I mean, it really doesn't matter. But Elmer was on The View today. Did you hear about that?
No.
Anyway, he was telling why he quit the Senate. And
Oh, yeah. Okay, you took me. Elmer, yeah. I don't want to be in the Senate anymore. Yeah, well, Evan Bayh.
Well, Elmer Fudd, you know.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, he was on there, and Joy, when he was telling about what he was dissatisfied with, she said, well, you're saying the same thing as Sarah Palin.
Who?
And he held his hand out and said, look at my hand. And that's all. And, of course, Elizabeth got all bent out of shape about it, told him that she didn't think it was right for him to make cheap Palin jokes.
No, only expensive Palin jokes. Like her taking $100,000 to talk to 600 teabaggers. Sorry.
That's okay. But we haven't really been talking a lot about politics until today. I mean, they have, I think they've been told to keep it quieter. But today, they had about the credit cards,
mm-hmm.
You know, the new rule.
Yeah.
And the guy was on there, and I did like what Whoopi said about, well, she said it to Evan Bayh.
Elmer Bayh.
Anyway, she said, why doesn't it matter what we the people want? When are we ever going to get what we want?
because the man's keeping...
I was proud of her because she brought that up to the credit card guy, too. Of course, he was very sympathetic about the credit cards, because you've heard about some of the stuff that's happening with that. If you have a credit card, that you haven't been using and you don't owe anything on it,
yeah,
they're going to start charging you a yearly fee.
Right, because no sooner was this legislation written, Juanita, than the credit card industry deployed its phalanxes of lawyers to come up with new ways to fleece the American public.
Yeah.
Because they're evil.
Yeah, they are. The guys told them, said they're usurers. It's usury.
Yeah, and the carpenter from Nazareth didn't take too well to usurers, did he?
He sure didn't, did he? But, you know, we've been told not to talk about him, what he said, because he don't make nobody do nothing. That's what this guy said on C-SPAN. You know, because we were saying, some of our people were saying, you know, that Jesus would want everybody to have health care. And, but that, you know, the thing is that they started saying that they knew what he meant about everything. So that's why we have to say these things sometimes. But nobody brings that up. But anyway, another thing is they're supposed to give you notice if they are going to charge a late fee. And those can go up. But they'll give you like 2 months, supposed to give you 2 months.
And your remedy to that is precisely what?
Mine?
Well, I mean, not yours, but I mean, any cardholder's remedies. What?
We ain't got none. And he said they can raise your rates. You know, they have to keep the rates what you start with. I forget if it's less than a year or what, but after that, they can raise it anytime. They got a lot of, and he brought up about, you know, that South Dakota. Is it South Dakota or North Dakota?
Oh, the credit card capital, that was South Dakota.
Yeah. And he brought that up, you know. They were busy. And they're not supposed to allow someone under age, you know, they're not supposed to go into colleges like they do. They have to have an adult with them. But anyway, I don't know. I mean, I'm really sick of the things now. I've been, you know, because it used to be when that if they said you had a credit, so much credit, you did. But now you got to play the game. You know, if they say you got so much credit, you got to remember they're going to take interest out of that. They're going to take late charges out of that. They're going to take, if you have late charges, that can put you over, and then they're going to take overcharging out. And, you know, it's just ridiculous. I don't know. I don't see what good they are anymore. I think they're horrible. But anyway, one thing I want to tell you about some morons.
Okay.
My county.
Oh, yeah.
I've been reported, and I'm still under that.
The authorities know where you live.
Yeah. But I've been reading some articles in the paper about different people, what they went through, and I read the saddest story today of what the county's putting these people through. The young couple has saved up to buy them a home. They got three very young children. Looks like one of them is about two, and maybe the oldest one's eight, seven or eight. And they saved up to buy their dream home. They found this beautiful home. They did everything. You know, they had it inspected for bugs, and they had it inspected for anything wrong, and it passed with flying colors. So they just had this house now for 4 years. And it started groaning and creaking, and their family room fell 15 inches down. They had all kind of repairs done to it, like 27 different things, and they borrowed extra money, and so they owe more on it than it was worth. And anyway, they finally decided to ask the county, because they couldn't borrow any money anywhere else, and they were out of money. And they asked the county to come out and inspect it and, you know, condemn it. So if they got rid of it, nobody else would have to buy it, you know, by mistake. And they came out, and they said, oh, no, no, this can be fixed. And the thing is full of mold. The foundation's crumbling. And so they started, like, they found out that the house should not have been built in that particular zone before, because of the ground is like lowland, and it's a wood-framed house.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't have even been built there. Okay, after it was built, the county came out and passed it with flying colors. And anyway, then they it's just a mess, Bob. And but while the county said, no, we can't condemn it, we just failed it. They just gave it a failure and said that owners would have to fix it. So then they go and they think the county should be liable for that right from the beginning. And no, they weren't liable. The people who inspect for bugs, you know, they weren't reliable. Because, see, it already had rot in it and everything. It just had all kinds of things wrong. And the inspector, he said, oh, well, I'm going to try to help you out. I'll get somebody to help you fix it. And they kept calling and calling for a year. And they finally got a letter from the guy's lawyers that he wasn't responsible. He wasn't doing anything. And the reporter, you know, tried to interview him, you know, and he refused to be interviewed. So everybody, you know, nobody's at fault. And anyway, they finally, after being turned down quite a bit, they finally have found an attorney. And I'm just, anybody that prays or thinks good or has a good thought, whatever, I pray he will get, they, people will get bucket loads of money. Because, you know, that mold, it can kill you. It can ruin your life. It can cause you to lose brain cells. It can make you deathly ill. It's horrible.
That's true.
And these people, this is the kind of people I'm having to deal with.
Lord.
That's just one thing.
Well, try to be as strong as you can be. That's no advice, and that's cold comfort, I know, but it's.
Well, the thing with mine is, I was told that I had junk, and that I had not gotten. I had two old sheds, and one of them was 8x8, and the other was about 6x6, and added on a place for my washing machine. And she said they weren't allowed to have but one shed. And what she called junk was what they're saying junk. It was like a 15-foot travel trailer my son had bought, and he was going to fix it up. And that was what she called junk. Because I had no idea. To me, junk is like you got, like, a bunch of junk cars and all that kind of stuff. So we decided to go ahead, my son and I, you know, we started sawing away and sawing the little trailer and then I met some two guys that were, you know, we have people like sell metal, and I've done it myself too, but we're not allowed to keep anything like that. So they came, and so I decided, you know, they were real nice. I decided that any kind of metal that we had, I would give to them. So we got rid of all except the little trailer. It was 15 foot long that the travel trailer come on. And I asked her, could we keep it? And she said, you have to get a tag. Well, I tried to find out how much a tag would be, And they couldn't give me any kind of a thing. I had to go through a rigmarole about that. So we decided to try to sell it, and did. Did really, you know, sell it. So anyway, then she said that I would have to get a permit for the one. She was going to let me keep them, but I would have to get a permit for the one, which it had, like, it was leaking. The roof needed fixing, and the siding needed repairing, that's all. But just having the time, you know, to do all these things. And anyway, I called the county, and they said it would cost at least no less than $89 for a permit, and that it might go on upwards to $200. And I said, you know, because it'd be according to what they said, and said, then we might have to get an engineer out, too. This is a little bitty shed. I mean, they want me to fix it up like for the Queen of Sheba. So I said, well, what in the world does the house cost? He said, you don't want to know. And Bob, I just said, we got to tear it down.
Well, I think so that's clearly what they want.
These guys that I was giving the medal to, my son had gotten really sick, and I've been hobbling around. And so these guys, I asked them that were getting the medal, I said, will you tear it down for the medal and some of the wood, if you want any of the wood? So they told me they would. And they got it tore down, and I sawed up all the wood that was left, you know, to get the county to throw away. And I'm really glad that there was some people stopped and got the wood, so I guess somebody could use it for firewood, if nothing else, because it had all kind of nails in it. And I was told that my building was a hazard. And I said, well, it went through three hurricanes. And those guys that tore it down, they said this thing was well built. So now we've got the floor left. So I called today and I said...
Well, you know, thank God you're not Joe Stack, Juanita, because he would have flown a plane into a building over this. Whereas, you know, you're just patiently trying to deal with the bureaucracy.
Well, I'm trying not to go out of my head because my son just gets so upset about it, you know.
Yeah, somebody's got to be calm.
Yeah, I try. But anyhow, just... You know, I could go on, but I know other horror stories out here, so I don't know, Bob. I've been thinking about maybe making a YouTube about it or seeing if I can get some kind of bill up, because they don't give you time enough. They take you by surprise. And we've got all kind of places out here that's got two sheds, sometimes more than two. But anyway, I pleased them so far.
Well, God love you for the perseverance, Juanita.
But
let me make something clear. You have responded rationally. You have responded sanely. You have responded like a responsible citizen. Yeah, you know this is wrong, but they're not going to quit tormenting you.
No.
You have not written a 3,500-word screed. Posted it online, talked about how you're being persecuted, even though in this case you are. And you have not sought to do harm to other human beings in a fit of pique. And that is the difference between you and me and us and murderous, cowardly freaks like Joe Stack.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've got to run on, Juanita, because I want to make sure I get these other blinking...
The taxes.
Yes.
The sales tax, you know good and well, we'd be the ones to pay that. If they went all sales tax...
Oh, sure. That's the ultimate...
would not pay.
Yeah, that's the ultimate regressive tax.
Yeah.
That filthy national sales tax, fair tax, flat tax. Because the poor are the ones who spend, it is the ultimate regressive tax, because the poor spend a higher percentage of their income paying that tax than any of the rich will ever do.
Yeah.
It's that easy. Juanita, hang in there, dear, and we will talk soon.
Oh, I feel sorry for those people.
I know.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our Central Florida correspondent and View correspondent, that is Juanita. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, it's Dave in Humboldt County up by Oregon, Northern California here.
Hey, Dave, what's up?
Well, it is my good fortune to have, as a neighbor, David Cobb of Democracy Unlimited and the Green Party. And last Saturday we had a get-together, a meeting here, a number of us, and on the issue of the Supreme Court and their ruling on the matter of corporations being...
Yeah, the Citizens United case.
To be yes, okay. Well, I recommend that all of you listeners try to get on any search engine and put in Democracy Unlimited and get a hold of this. We're passing petitions and probably soon going to be having clipboards going around getting a resolution that we, the people, don't consider corporations to be human beings. And that we plan to do something about that. Apparently it was a provision left from the original founding fathers of this country that if need be, the people could once again call a new constitutional convention. And if the government is not acting appropriate to our needs or wishes, that we can undo that and change it. The people are the ultimate authority. And so Dave, more than anybody, David Cobb and supposedly Belknap, they take the position that we the people can take an active role and override a government that's out of hand. And I think it's at that point.
Well, I'm real careful in the days following Joe Stack and his airplane to talk about a government out of hand or out of control. What we have are corporations that are out of control that are aided and abetted by right-wing fascists who are inclined to aid and abet them in the first place. We have a process whereby we can remedy the situation if we choose to do so. And it doesn't involve guns or bullets or anything.
These same corporations put the money in the pockets of the elected officials.
Right.
It falls upon these elected officials to act in the interest of the corporations. They're being bought. And we, the people, for the most part, don't have the kind of money that buys politicians. You don't, do you? You're not a rich man.
Not by any stretch. No, I am a poor man.
Yes,
I am a broke man.
And so am I. But the big corporations, they can dump $500,000 on a politician like that. And that means something. A politician, you know, that's running for re-election and whatnot, that kind of money means something. Very few seem to be able to pull it off without money. Bernie Sanders, maybe. Dennis Kucinich, a few. Don't seem to need to be owned by these big special interests. But most feel that if they're going to have to buy television and newspaper time, they're going to need a lot of money, and that's going to come from those who have a lot of money, and they're the ones that want more for themselves, the greediest of the special interests. Anyway, I'd ask anybody that's listening to get Democracy Unlimited on the line and see. There's petitions that they've had hundreds of thousands, I guess, now signing to get, make it known.
Well, you know, Donna Edwards introduced a very compelling constitutional amendment that has 7 years, that she has 7 years to try to get passed. She's probably got less than 12 months to try to get it through the House and the Senate before a new Congress is convened. There's that. But frankly, I think the quickest and surest remedy to the Citizens United case is to get rid of the perjurious bastards who brought it to us. And two of those people, and only two, and that's all it would take, would be for the Senate to impeach, or the House to impeach, and the Senate to try John Roberts and Samuel Alito. Because they both sat there, Dave, and they told us, under oath, that they would honor the principle of stare decisis, which if you do that,
does not admit of the decision that was rendered in Citizens United. They committed perjury, pure and simple. They should be tried for it. They should be impeached. They should be tried for it. And they should be peacefully and legally removed from the office they hold. And Barack Obama should appoint two new justices. And because it was corruptly rendered, it should be reconsidered by that new court. That is the easiest path to the remedy of the situation. But, you know, I see this proliferation, Dave, on Facebook of impeach all five of them, do this, do that, do the other thing, when the one thing that will remedy the situation is what I just described. And it will do it quickly, relatively easily, and safely and nonviolently. But, you know, I'm a little guy with a radio show on the internet, and it ain't getting any traction. You know, we've got a Facebook fan page up there and stuff like that, but there you go. Dave, I've got to roll along. I want to try to make sure I get my last call in before the end of the program tonight. All right, you have a good night. Take care. That's Dave calling from Northern California, and are you there still? Yes, you are. Hey, welcome to the program.
Let's end this on a Moran Monday.
Yes, let's do, David.
Yes, okay. Well, apparently there was a wedding. And I think this is the king of all morons tonight. There was a wedding, apparently, in India. And they decided to celebrate with guns.
Nice!
Yes. The uncle decided, I think I'll shoot first. Well, he just happened to shoot the groom on top of the head, killing him instantly. And, you know, the thing that reminds me of, that's like a bad Monty Python sketch, but, you know, he's probably thinking way in the recess of his mind. He thought, what was I thinking? But there's
well, yeah, it's like some sort of NRA version of William Tell, David, where, you know, where you've got, you know, William Tell sitting there having just shot the apple going, damn, I shot the apple again.
But there is a part of him, probably, that's right there. It's hard, probably hard to live with it now, but the guilt is probably there that he wishes he did have a gun that shot blanks if he needed to shoot something. I mean, really, Bob, I mean, you really don't need to use live ammo at a wedding. If you want to shoot, you can shoot. You know what you can do? You can shoot Nerf guns. Nerf guns are...
You know what I saw the other day? I saw a marshmallow gun.
Yeah, oh, yeah, potato gun. There you go.
No, that potato gets moving, but a marshmallow gun, you know, utterly non-lethal. I mean, you know, what we're boiling this down to is, what is Hindi for, hey, y'all, watch this. You know, the idea of redneck is not confined to the United States.
Yeah. So I just wanted to mention that, and before I go, I did want to mention if people want to hear me sometime, you can always check me at... on John Fox's show, Hour 2.
Absolutely.
Talked about all kinds of crazy stuff. So if you guys want to check it out sometime at 9 o'clock Sunday.
Well, you know, Sunday nights at 9 p.m. are when the conversation radio starts up again.
That's right.
Exactly. All right. Well, David, have yourself a great evening, and thanks for putting a nice little bow on Moran Monday.
All right. Later.
All right. Later. Bye now. And just to let you know, there is some breaking good news out there. Former Vice President Richard B. Big Time Dick Cheney was hospitalized this evening at George Washington University Hospital after suffering from chest pains. Cheney's office said in a statement, quote, his doctors are evaluating the situation and he is resting comfortably. Well, it's not all good news. NBC News reporting that Richard B. Dick, Big Time Dick Cheney, you know, Dick Cheney before he dicks you, underwent an angiogram, a procedure allowing doctors to examine blood flow in an artery. Doctors described his condition on the network, to the network, as stable, which is not as good as good, or not as good as up and about and ready to wish more people had been tortured. You know, gosh, I hope it didn't hurt too little. The story noting Cheney has a history of heart disease. He suffered the first of four heart attacks at age 37 and had eight cardiac events, including surgeries to replace a pacemaker and to implant a vascular stent between 2000 and 2008. See? That is how good socialized medicine in America can be. You can be one of the most evil sons of bitches on planet Earth, but if you've got good socialized health care in America, you can start having heart attacks because your heart is rejecting your evil ass at the age of 37, and you can keep surviving. You can be part and parcel of torture. You can be part and parcel of the slaughter of a million Iraqi civilians and thousands of American service people. You can do all of that and keep on doing it and showing up on Sunday talk shows talking about how Obama's not protecting us from the terrorists. Clear. You can do all that with good medical coverage. The best medical coverage that the people of the United States can pay for. But we, us, the little people, one good heart attack, and we're done. Yeah, Cheney's having chest pains. I'm reminded by our buddy David in Tennessee, the head writer of the program, of the immortal words of our gone but not forgotten pal Clyde over at the former WD40.com. Send bacon. Yeah, or maybe, and biscuits. Send biscuits made with real lard. Gene, you gotta love those. So that's where the program ends. That's the end of Moran Monday. Remember, we'll be a little bit late getting to the air tomorrow evening. The program will start at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we will be live from the campus of West Virginia State University in the Seneca 2 Forum, featuring Robert Perry of ConsortiumNews.com. We will be live with audio, and we will also be live, for the first time ever, with video at ustream.tv. ustream.tv. Just look for the channel called The Horn, and there will be a link at headonradionetwork.com as well. Thanks, everybody, for making this a really superior show. I sincerely appreciate it. Thanks to all of you who contribute financially to keep The Horn going. We draw ever clearer, ever nearer to actually reaching our monthly goal of $2,000 raised to keep The Horn on the air. And we are all sincerely grateful for your efforts in doing so. If you want to help out for the month, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address if you prefer not to use PayPal. Either way is fine. Thanks to our moderators in the chat room, Sue and Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger and intrepid Texas journalist, Texas Betsy. Thanks to our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne. Thanks to our head writer, David in Tennessee. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch, all integral to every single program getting out and doing what the program needs to do. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net and coalriverwind.org. They are, in fact, the hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hooray, 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 step right up. You will not believe your eyes. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Step right up, step right up. Entry is free. You will not believe the freaks who stand before you this Moran Monday on the horn. We've had a weekend in which all manner of Morans have come pouring out of the right-wing cesspool sewer that they inhabit. Hurry, hurry, hurry. You cannot tell your Morans without a program, and this is the program to identify the Morans for you. Hurry, hurry, hurry. We've got a lovely crowd established on the midway for this Moran Monday. Hurry, hurry, hurry.
Yeah, we really do. We've got them local. We've got them national. We've got them international. It's almost like the end of that Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Head for the hills! You'll be up to your armpits in Morans!
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is, this could be fun tonight. Or it could be creepy and scary. Because you know what? There is an element, there is a portion of the Moranosphere that is past, being, stupid and going way over into crazy. Obviously, for instance, the Texas teabagger terror pilot, Joe Stack, clearly belongs on Moran Monday. How could he possibly not? And of course, as nominees for Moran Monday, we can also include all the, no kidding, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people in this country who, left and right alike, are saying things like, well, I understand why he done what he done. Really? You do? You understand why a disaffected white guy whose tax dodge failed, who owned $250,000 house, who owned an airplane, would set fire to his house with his wife and children in it, and then go fly his airplane into a building with working human beings in it? You understand why he did that? Oh, hell yeah! There's one. First of all, and it's up on the website at headonradionetwork.com. Our Southeast correspondent Matt Osborne of OsborneInc.com, OsborneInc.com, built a little video. Over the last few days, that takes advantage of a few of the things that were said here on the program, I guess Thursday night. Go over to headonradionetwork.com and have a look. It's pretty cool. Matt did great work. But if you go and you see the thing at YouTube, where, you know, it's its own little YouTube location, you'll see this little guy about three related videos down on the right. Remember, and this is the obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. Do you remember the episode where the Enterprise was up against the really big scary spaceship? And Captain Kirk threatened to trigger the Corbomite device? Because there was this really creepy looking alien with a really long, creepy head, but it turned out that he was just the facade for a very peaceable young Clint Howard. Yes, that episode. Well, this little dude who posted, you know, him and his webcam, me and my webcam, yeah, that kind of thing, posted a response entitled Joseph Stack is a Hero, looks just like the long-faced alien guy had a kid, and gave him a little laptop or MacBook or whatever with a webcam in it. And the kid grew a beard, or part of one, much as he could. Just listen to this. This guy's a loony. Here we go.
A man called Joseph Stack crashed his little plane into an IRS building in Texas recently. And all I have to say is, having read the incidents surrounding why he did it, he is a hero. And he deserves the applause of all people who support freedom. Because here's the thing. You get from the government every fucking single...
Hey, Moran, does he deserve the support from the people who love freedom that he killed? Oh, I guess they didn't love freedom because they were just government functionaries.
Single day, freedom isn't free. Freedom isn't free. We've got to send young men over to, you know, foreign places to die so that we can be free.
Well, sadly, not you, but I know what you mean, buddy.
It's okay to die for what the government says is freedom. Isn't it all right to die for what you think freedom is? I think so.
So this guy has been transmuted in a matter of...